going to close them.
GCSE results day will see a failing of white working class children, says the education secretary. She blames the school system. How is it letting those children down? And
we will be fighting really hard to represent our residents and for those people's voices to be heard.
Now even Labour-run councils gear up to take the government to court to shut down those migrant hotels, with politicians on the right calling for more demonstration outside them. Is that wise?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has urged more Tory councils to bring legal challenges over asylum hotels. She says they should take the same steps as in Epping, where the authority secured a temporary injunction earlier this week. At least two Labour-run councils are also considering legal challenges. LBC's Benji Hyer has more.
That stopped the government from using Epping's Bell Hotel to house migrants. The leader of the opposition, Kemi Badenoch, says Epping had achieved a victory for local people following this High Court ruling, and she is urging other council leaders to take similar action to protect their communities.
Labour has dismissed Kemi Badenoch's letter to councils as a desperate and hypocritical response. Pupils across England, Wales and Northern Ireland will receive their GCSE results this morning. Many of the teenagers picking up their marks were in their last year of primary school when the pandemic hit. The Education Secretary says they've shown remarkable resilience. Israel's military says the preliminary phase of its operation in Gaza City has begun in its outskirts. The UN has warned about the impacts of the offensive on the humanitarian situation. Blake Sifton is LBC's correspondent in Tel Aviv.
The residents of the neighborhoods in Gaza City that are under fire are fleeing to other parts of Gaza City. When you see images there, the streets are packed with tents of the displaced. Now, when it comes to the main offensive to capture Gaza City, the Israeli military has said that they will first set up tents and infrastructure in the south to house the displaced Palestinians. Now, we would then see evacuation orders for Gaza City.
Two people are being questioned by police after an ice cream man was stabbed to death in northwest London. Shahzad Khan died following reports of an altercation on a road in Wembley just after 6 o'clock on Tuesday evening. A 26-year-old man and 31-year-old woman were arrested at the scene. The NSPCC says the law on smacking in England and Northern Ireland is out of step with public attitudes. The charity says its latest polling supports the removal of the reasonable punishment defence to justify hitting a child. Any type of corporal punishment is banned in Scotland and Wales. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 92.88. After closing up 98 yesterday, the pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, a mixture of cloud and sunny spells, some isolated light showers in the north and east, a high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Bill?
Yes?
Can you throw my green dress in the bin?
Are you sure?
Yeah.
It's not that bad, love. Your sister said you looked like a courgette. I'm sure she meant it in a cute way.
Bill.
Well, you could at least donate it. There must be someone who could get use out of it. Maybe turn it into a pair of curtains.
I said put it in the laundry bin, Bill.
Oh, right.
Not hearing the whole conversation? Book a free hearing check with one of our experts at Specsavers.
I've always loved courgettes.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you, 3 minutes past seven the time. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast this Thursday morning on LBC. Hope we find you incredibly well. Coming up,
parents now, especially in the modern world, we've got more tools in the toolbox that it never needs to get to the point of physical violence.
Smacking children is increasingly seen as unacceptable in any circumstances by the next generation of parents, who say any degree of force is unreasonable. Does that smack of good sense? Or of people who don't know the reality of having children yet? Also,
we want to liberate ourselves and liberate the people of Gaza from the awful terror of Hamas.
To almost total international condemnation, Israel begins its assault on Gaza City as it calls up 60,000 reservists. We'll be live in Tel Aviv. And
there's undoubtedly a problem on public transport and in society generally, actually, of people who are just disrespectful to other people.
Finally, At last, a train line doing what passengers need doing. Fines are going to be administered for feet on the seats, for vaping and for playing music loudly. A restoration of train etiquette. Will applaud the train line doing it later.
Call 0345 60 60973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Very good morning to you. This hour...
Well, maybe the government should do what the British people want, which is to process these people, reject their applications and deport them.
Take to the streets is the call from certain political figures on the right, including Nigel Farage, after yesterday's court ruling that saw Epping become the first district council to successfully force the closure of an asylum hotel. Richard Tice, the Reform deputy from whom you just heard, confirming that all 12 Reform councils will press ahead with legal challenges to close asylum hotels following the precedent set in Epping, with some encouragement of local residents to protest to show their frustration, perhaps in part to help legal action. Is that a helpful thing to encourage? Is this an issue that would see you fancy taking yourself off down to an asylum hotel for a few hours this weekend to protest? Meanwhile, Labour councils are looking too into legal action, so it's not just Reform or the Tories. Kemi Badenoch writing to her councillors, urging them to, and I'll quote, protect their communities. Which, by the way, isn't really what swung the court case Epping's way. It was a pretty narrow planning law that got that hotel closed, calling on people to protect their community. If not hotels, and if not in the area there where you live, then where? Are there councillors, Labour ones, Lib Dem ones, Green councillors, who would happily have these hotels in their areas? Because if they're not going to go into a hotel, folks, they're going to go into a flat or a bedsit or a house of multiple occupancy. Indeed, in the Telegraph today, the Home Office is reported as issuing an urgent appeal for 5,000 properties to house up to 20,000 migrants amid accommodation crisis caused by a High Court ruling. So they're not going to go into their hotel down the road, but they're going to have to go into the HMO. Which is better? Would you still take to the streets? Get your calls in just a few moments. Councillor Paul Mason joins us, Conservative councillor for Broxbourne, who is seeking legal action to block these asylum seekers from being housed at a hotel in Cheshunt. Thanks for coming on the programme, councillor. Are you aware yet of what legal ways you're going to try and get this hotel blocked by?
Morning, Tom. Morning. We're currently taking legal action as we speak. Legal advice as we speak. So our lawyers will be getting in contact with Epping, and we're looking at the legal ruling in detail. And then based on that advice, we'll be looking what our next step's going to be. But we are looking to, our MP has asked, written to the Home Secretary, raise it in Parliament that the hotel is closed. That has been ignored. So it's our only course of action that's left open to us at the moment. And we're hopeful that we can take action, because the pressures on our community are absolutely unbearable. We can't get doctors' appointments as it stands. It's putting further pressure on our services. We're seeing a disproportionate, we've done an FOI request, one of my colleagues, we've seen a disproportionate number of ambulance visits, about 11 a month on average to this hotel. This is a further drain on our resources, because I've had friends, family waiting 2 hours,
yes,
for an ambulance.
What are we saying, though, Paul? What are we saying? That whether it's a hotel or an HMO, if an ambulance needs to be called because someone's having a heart attack or being, I don't know, in dire need of urgent healthcare, the ambulance doesn't go or should prioritise non-migrants? What are we saying?
The point is, Tom, I would argue anecdotally, it's very unlikely that you're going to have 11. So you've got a hotel with 200 or 300 people living in that hotel.
Yes.
It's disproportionate that you would have up to 10 ambulance visits a month. I mean, in my road I live in, there's probably a couple of hundred.
If the ambulance service say that is required or believe that is required, whether it's a hotel or a house or a street or whatever, are you saying that the ambulance shouldn't go? I don't understand what the argument is here.
No, the argument here is I believe that the people in the hotel were calling out ambulances for the most trivial of reasons, and putting a further drain on our community.
Do Do you have evidence of that?
Yeah, we've done an FOI request.
We've done an FOI request to see how many times the ambulance turns up, but you haven't got details, unless you're going to tell me, which I'd be grateful for, of what they've turned up to deal with.
True, but
Right, so we don't know, do we, Councillor? We don't know what the ambulance has gone there for.
But it's disproportionate, though.
But if there's a requirement for the ambulance to turn up, which is judged by the ambulance crew, which may or may not be necessary for them to put the blue lights on and go to, I grant you, but we need to know that information, don't we, before we leap to conclusions about what's going on.
But the latest evidence we're having that the ambulances, and this all started because the ambulances were being parked outside, they're now being hidden around the back of the hotel. Right. So it just raises further questions all the time. And the whole asylum argument is a farce. Convey that is when they are rejected, some of these asylum seekers, their applications are rejected, they're let out into the community. You've just mentioned mm-hmm. about deportations mm-hmm. and politicians talking about no one's deported. From the anecdotal evidence we're receiving,
yes.
people are turning up at our council saying our application's been turned down, can you house us?
Yes, and that's been the case for years. I mean, that's been the case for years. But you're right, that has been the case
But the public are being told that people are being deported. They're being lied to. And it goes back to the Home Office is not fit for purpose. The Home Secretary should resign over these matters. We've got a Home Office that cannot conduct itself adequately.
The number of people in asylum hotels was at its peak when the Conservatives were in office. This small boats in the Channel crisis has increased dramatically in the last 10 years whilst Conservatives have been in office. Or do you see this fundamentally as a Labour issue?
Labour have dispersed people into the community. So maybe the number of people in hotels have gone down. But there's increases in HMO use for asylum seekers, mm-hmm. in private housing. And we've got a housing crisis across the country.
Where do they go, Paul? If it's not a hotel or a house or an HMO, I really do sympathise with the problem. Of course I do. But let's deal with the politics as we've got it. What happens?
Well, it's not for us to have to deal with it locally. We're a local council. We're elected by local people to run local services. It's not our problem that the Home Office dump a whole load, hundreds of people in our borough with all sorts of issues that we have to pick up.
Yeah.
We don't get adequate funding for any of this.
Do you think that there are councils who would be more willing to accept asylum hotels, asylum seekers in HMOs?
Oh, clearly, yeah. I think there are councils out there that will be, more friendly towards these sort of facilities. I personally don't believe Labour are serious about this. I think privately they support it. Starmer's made a career out of defending human rights, asylum, mm-hmm. all this type of thing. He's made a career. He's the wrong man to oversee it.
Well, he's a human rights lawyer, I guess, and there's the need for human rights lawyers. Councillor, thank you. Councillor Paul Mason is a Conservative councillor for Broxbourne, seeking legal action to block asylum seekers from being housed at a hotel there. Jacqueline McKenzie joins us as head of immigration and asylum law at Lee Day Solicitors. Thank you for coming on the programme, Jacqueline. So, in terms of a legal precedent, what does this ruling for Epping District Council do?
Well, it is only an injunction, so it doesn't do a great deal at the moment. We have to wait and see what the substantive matter decides. And as you rightly said, it only really deals with a very narrow point, i.e. have these hotels got the right sort of permission, i.e. planning permission, to be used to house people in what the law describes as a hostel style, so having asylum seekers there as though they were in a hostel, rather than it being used as a hotel. Now, a judge has to look at whether this change of use requires planning permission in the substantive hearing. And to do that, they'd have to look at whether serious harm is being caused to those communities. Now, serious harm is being caused to those communities at the moment because there's lots of protests and so on. But that's not the test. It's whether there's noise or pollution or other problems being caused by the actual inhabitants. So it's a very discreet area. It's not my expertise, but it's a very discreet area. And all we've got at the moment is what we call interim relief, a temporary measure.
So the ruling for Epping did not really highlight or rely upon
people's concerns about the community's safety or indeed some of the violence that was seen outside the hotels in those protests?
No, because that's not what the matter was about.
Yeah.
The matter was about whether and Epping Council brought a case purely, and other councils had had advice that they wouldn't succeed, but Epping Council has succeeded on the basis as to whether these hotels require planning permission for change of use.
So if there is a hotel, can those hotels retrospectively apply for that planning permission?
Now, I don't know a lot about planning laws. I know in ordinary sense, you know, people do, don't they? You know, we see someone's built a garage at the side of their house and they're trying to get retrospective permission. So I don't doubt that that's possible, but I don't know. For a fact, what we do know, though, about these hotels, I mean, I'm very familiar with two of them in South London, and those hotels were mostly empty. You know, they used to have a lot of backpackers coming in from Europe back in the day. That kind of market's dried up. And the government has offered quite lucrative deals to some of these hotels, you know, a place that was costing about £20-30 a night for a backpacker, you know, the hoteliers are now getting over £100 a night for an asylum seeker. So it's very lucrative. And courts will also have to look at, can you destroy a business model? Because that's what will happen up and down the country. Had it not been for asylum seekers going into these hotels, a lot of them would have closed down. And the government is duty bound by law. We've got the Immigration and Asylum Act of 1999, but we've also got subsequent pieces of legislation. We've also got How You Protect the Welfare of Children, Section 55 of the Borders and Citizenship and Immigration Act. We are mandated, the government is mandated to house asylum seekers, whether the society likes it or not. And we do get, you know, I understand there's about 109,000 people waiting in the system. The numbers have gone down.
Yes, but I take your point about housing them and the legal requirement to house them. But surely it can't be right to have people housed in circumstances, one, that are incredibly expensive, and two, that allow those people, we don't know who they are in some cases, to have access to the wider community.
Well, they have to be housed, so they're going to be housed in some community. What we're seeing is a lot of, well, we don't want them in our backyard.
Well, they need shelter. They need shelter, sure.
That can be done in a variety of different ways.
It doesn't have to be done in a hotel and they can walk into town and buy coffees and get jobs and what have you. That doesn't need to happen, that bit.
They need shelter. And one of the things here, and this government has actually reduced the numbers of people waiting for asylum. They're processing quicker. Uh-huh. You know, the system is very slow. I deal with these claims. It's a very slow process. That's improved. The numbers of people in asylum hotels has gone down because the processing has gone faster. And if people gain asylum, they can go out and find their own accommodation. They can go out and find jobs and pay for it.
Yes, although it takes forever to give them that claim. And, of course, some of them don't, and then they appeal, and then we get into this wrangling of how long it's going to take and whether they should be here at all. Jacqueline, I've got to leave it there. Thank you. Jacqueline McKenzie, Head of Immigration and Asylum Law at Lee Day Solicitors. Reality is this. If a hotel down the road from me where I live suddenly turned into an asylum seeker hotel, I would be worried, right? I wouldn't be too happy about it. Does that make me xenophobic, racist, all the rest of it? Don't know. But I hand on heart, would not be pleased. So if it's not a hotel, they're going to have to go somewhere. And I take the point that ultimately you think they all need to be removed. The reality is governments have tried that for years and for whatever reason it can't work. So leave the ECHR. Well, that doesn't necessarily help either, because where are you going to take them to? If a country that you want to put them in doesn't have an agreement with you, then they're not going to want to accept them. This is a really, really tight Gordian knot. Is it something that you would go down and protest about? Nigel Farage says more people should. Would that be you? Get your calls in just a few moments' time. Also,
there is widespread distaste of physical punishment. People increasingly don't think that it should be part of childhood.
Smacking is seen as increasingly unacceptable by the next generation of parents. Does that mean an outright ban in England and Wales is more likely? We'll get into the details after the 7:18 news headlines. Thomas Watt.
The Conservatives have followed Reform UK in calling for more councils to bring legal challenges over asylum hotels. Pupils across England, Wales and Northern Ireland are picking up their GCSE results this morning. And Israel's military says it's beginning the preliminary stages of its operation to take over Gaza City. LBC weather, cloud and sunny spells for most, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. On the M4, one lane is closed eastbound. eastbound due to a broken down vehicle from Junction 11 for Reading to Junction 10 for Bracknell. On the M3, a lane is closed southbound from Junction 4 for Camberley to Junction 4A for Farnborough because of a broken down vehicle. One lane is closed on the M25 anti-clockwise due to an accident before Junction 10 for the A3. In New Cross, Hatch and Park Road is closed eastbound due to a building fire. That's from the A2 New Cross Road to Camplin Street. The recuse in Colston on the A23 Brighton Road in both directions between Colston North and Purley. And buses are running instead of trains on Southern between Redhill and Tunbridge. That's due to engineering works.
This is LBC.
Got the tiles?
Got the snacks?
K-W-E-E-N. Queen. 18 points.
That's so not how you spell it, but I'll let you off. My turn.
Snap into the sharing bar that goes with any evening. Kit Kat sharing bars. Crispy Kit Kat wafers with three irresistible fillings in hazelnut, salted caramel or double chocolate, covered in thick marbled swirls. Perfect for sharing. Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
This is LBC.
Rotimi likes Pension B's modern approach to pensions.
I think Pension B has brought pensions into the 21st century, firstly through the use of technology. Signing up to the app is super simple. Pension B makes me feel very confident about my finances and makes me feel like I have a plan when it comes to my retirement.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Ta. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you. Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:22 the time. Tom Swarbrick here in for Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Take to the streets is the call from various politicians, including Nigel Farage, who says now that protests around asylum hotels have proved their legal usefulness, he is encouraging more people to do it. Reality is the Epping decision didn't rest particularly heavily on the violence at those protests, or indeed the protests themselves, but more on a tight bit of planning law that meant that the hotel hadn't changed its you know, reason for existing into being more like a hostel than a hotel, and so got done on that. But is it an issue that you would take to the streets about? Is that call from Nigel Farage helpful? Indeed, when Kemi Badenoch tells her councillors to start taking legal action in order to, quote, protect their communities, is that language helpful? Now, as I said to you earlier, in my Kentish town, if there's an asylum home, I don't know whether there even is, to be honest with you. The government doesn't seem to want to tell the councils where they are. But if there is an asylum hotel in my town, I would be worried about it. And I defy anybody to say they would be 100% happy with it. So, yes, I would be worried about it. Would I want it to shut down? Yeah, probably. Or those people moved on or dispersed? Yeah, probably. But they're going to have to go somewhere. So we can't just deal with a fancied political reality in which, oh, everyone's sent back to France. And it's not happening. So if it's not going to be a hotel, then where? I'll bring you the news that, according to the Telegraph, the Home Office is issuing an urgent appeal for 5,000 properties to house up to 20,000 migrants amid an accommodation crisis caused by that High Court ruling. So they'll go into flats and HMS. Why there can't be a dedicated site set up in the same way that the Nightingale hospitals during COVID were, wow, they were found quickly and bang, they're rolled out within weeks. Let's do that, something like that. That would be better, no? Peter's in Stirling. Peter.
I think the calls for protests are deeply unhelpful and dangerous considering what happened last August. But I would just like to address the point you just said there. If an asylum hotel opened down the road for me, I would be fine with it. Quite simply because of this. I'm currently in the homelessness system up in Scotland, and last October I was put into a long-stay B&B for homeless people over in Kirkcaldy for 6 days. In there were a lot of people who were down and out, including drug addicts and other bits and people, and I've met some really troubled people who are good people, but they are struggling.
Yep.
Now, I remember growing up that whenever, say, a homeless hostel or something was opened in a street, everyone took to the streets and protested and said, we don't want them there, and it was exactly the same language and tone. So I'm sorry, but this whole one of the things that people bang on about with the asylum seekers is, oh, they're taking away homes for the homeless. I'm sorry, 15 years ago, we were attacking the homeless for being in our communities because we considered them all drug addicts or schizophrenics. We dehumanise people, and I think it's disgusting. So if an asylum hotel opened down the road, I'd go knock on the door and see how they are.
You wouldn't have any concern at all. So Kemi Badenoch says protect your community. And unfortunately, there have been incidents of criminality involving people in those buildings and alleged criminality involving people in those buildings. And that wouldn't worry you at all?
Well, not at all. As I said, I spent a week in a homeless hostel. I met people who have had some very troubled backgrounds, people who still are going through trouble.
Maybe you can lobby your local council in Stirling, Peter, to take some of the people who are taken out of these hotels.
Oh, I'd be off work, but I'm getting to another point very quickly, and you've mentioned it already.
You'd be what, sorry? So, did you say you'd be off work? Sorry, I missed
that. No, I'd be up for it.
Oh, okay.
I'd totally be up for that. But just to raise another point, though, if people don't want them in the hotels, which are great places, by the way, to keep people in a single location away from the community, as you've said, they're going to HMOs. I'm sorry, but do the people who want to go and protest, I'm going to put that in quote marks, want them as their neighbours? Because that's the only alternative.
Right, Peter, thank you very much. Maybe that's the future of this. They're those councils that say, yeah, we'll do it, we'll have it. They have a local referendum or something, or a vote. Yep, we'll take people. Maybe more people go there. I don't know. Sharon's in Gravesend. Sharon.
Hi. Hi, good morning. Yeah, I was telling your researchers that basically we have a hotel down the road, literally down the road from us, and it has been taken, and I'm just telling you what, you know, the local community have heard. It's not asylum seekers, it's actually full, and it has been full for well over a year, of people that are illegal immigrants. And
well,
you know,
that can only be judged after their asylum claim has been processed.
Well, that's not what I've heard on the grapevine.
Right, well, the process is, Sharon, unfortunately, and I realise it's complex, the minute someone arrives in this country and says, hi, hello, I'd like to claim asylum, please, they are then classed as an asylum seeker, and they are only deemed to be here illegally if they have no right to be here, i.e. once their asylum claim is processed.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah. But I'm sure, you know, it's a fairly big hotel, probably about 200 rooms or something. So I'm sure some of them are, you know, don't have the right to be here, really, because they're not asylum seekers.
Sure. Yeah.
But the hotel is, you know, it's been part of the community for decades, actually, and it's a nice hotel.
And why are you worried? What about it worries you?
Well, let me just carry on and say what I'm going to say. But basically, it used to be, a nice hotel that was open to the guests, and also non-guests could go in and use the restaurant and the bar, and there was tables outside, and you could sit outside and use for functions and also for Christmas lunches and things like that. But now it's totally closed to the public. It has got a gate outside, you know, that... So it's not open to the public anymore. And I just think it's a big if, because asylum seekers, to me, it's a completely different situation whatsoever. And they do have a right to be here. I mean, we want to help people like that. But if it's full of people, or the majority of people are here illegally and really don't have a right to be here, that's not fair on the community.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you totally. But you can only make that judgment once you process their claim. That's why the processing of the claim has to happen very, very quickly. Sharon, appreciate the call. Thank you very much indeed. 7:28 the time. Next.
Parents now, especially in the modern world, we've got more tools in the toolbox, but it never needs to get to the point of physical violence.
The belief among young adults that use of force against a child is unacceptable has now grown stronger in recent years, according to new polling, which is prompting campaigners to make a fresh call for a change in the law. Wales has made any type of corporal punishment, including smacking, hitting, slapping and shaking, illegal. Scotland introduced a similar ban back in 2020, but it's not completely outlawed in England and Northern Ireland. The new polling for the NSPCC suggests around 8 in 10 people between 18 and 24 years old believe it is unacceptable for a parent to use force, however slight, against a child. Simon Calvert is a spokesman from the Be Reasonable campaign, which campaigns against a smacking law change. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. I wonder what you make of this increase in the belief that this is an unacceptable use of force. Simon, morning.
Yeah, good morning. Let's just get back to what the core of the issue. What NSPCC are saying is not just that smacking is unacceptable, which is a view, and we can discuss and debate that. What they're saying is they want it to be made a criminal offence. And let's just be clear about what that change would mean, because the current law in England, as it used to be in Scotland and Wales, is that if a parent does anything to a child that is unreasonable, it is already a criminal offence. And the line is drawn at doing anything that leaves anything more than transient reddening of the skin. So it's the mildest possible kind of physical interaction. So you're talking about a mum tapping a tot on the back of the hands, on the back of the legs, something like that. That is currently reasonable chastisement.
Yes.
And what the NSPCC want is to change the law so that that defence would no longer be available, so that that will become a criminal offence. Now, let me tell you what's happening in Wales. We've been trying for years to get figures out of the Welsh Government. We've finally got some figures out of them. Thousands of parents every year are being referred to social services. Every year, 125 people are deemed possible to prosecute under the smacking ban. As it happens, under pressure from us, they decided that their approach would be a non-prosecution policy. But that's 125, and so instead they get kind of re-education. It's like a sort of re-education.
No, but Simon, what did those people do to those children to warrant investigation by the police?
Well, what I'm saying is it clearly wasn't anything that was actual violence. It clearly only the kind of it's only the reasonable chastisement, the tap on the back of the legs, the tap on the back of the hands. And so that's 125 parents a year in Wales that could have been prosecuted and in future years may be prosecuted. Now you gross that up for England, you end up with 2,500 parents in England every year being eligible for prosecution for nothing more than a tap on the back of the hands. You can say what you like, believe what you like about smacking, and I don't say that every parent should use smacking. Of course I don't. But should you really criminalise a parent for something so mild, so moderate? The fact is that most people don't think that. The YouGov tracking poll on this shows a clear majority think you should not criminalise smacking.
Simon, appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed. Simon Calvert is a spokesperson from the Be Reasonable campaign. There is a big difference, isn't there? So you know, your toddler reaches up for the pan handle on the hob. Bang. Slap their hand. Get away. Move away. That's fine. I think that is completely reasonable. I've got a 10 and an 8-year-old. I've never hit them because of their behaviour. And I don't want to hit them because of their behaviour, because I think that is the parent slightly losing control, if I'm honest with you. I think there are I have many, many psychological tools up my sleeve to get my children to comply. The PlayStation's already gone once this week, and it will go again if you don't pick up. You know, that sort of thing, I think, is more effective. But to criminalise people, I'm not so sure. 03456060973 is the number. Coming up,
a surge in tax receipts in July has eased the public sector borrowing pressure after a record splurge in June. I'm Christian May from City AM, and I'll be discussing this story with Tom shortly.
7:32 news headlines, Thomas Watts.
Conservative-controlled councils have been told to take the same steps as Epping over asylum hotels. A temporary injunction was granted earlier this week to stop the Bell Hotel being used to house migrants. The Education Secretary's praised the remarkable resilience of pupils picking up their GCSE results this morning. Teenagers who moved from primary to secondary school during the pandemic will receive their grades. Israel's military says it is beginning the preliminary stages of an operation to take over Gaza City. About 60,000 reservists are being called up as part of the offensive. LBC weather, a mixture of cloud and sunny spells, some light showers in the north and east, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC.
Ugh, drizzly drive to the office. Ever wanted to just shove some bits in a bag, hop on a plane, and land somewhere magnifique? Well, with Kayak Explore, it's easier than ever. Whatever your budget, wherever you want to go, simply set the amount you want to spend, and Kayak finds flights that fit. Easy breezy. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Who's a good human?
Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat, lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny.
Oh.
Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Text 84850.
We'll speak to the Shadow Home Secretary, Chris Philp, in a few moments' time about the issues around these asylum hotels. I can bring you some news that contingency accommodation that we heard from the Security Minister yesterday seems to be former RAF bases are being looked at now. The Telegraph saying that Wethersfield RAF base near Braintree in Essex, where the Home Office has raised the current cap of 800 migrants to allow 1,200 to live on the site. Residents apparently told at a meeting on Tuesday that the number had risen to 890, with 2 intakes of 50 more asylum seekers scheduled every week. It is apparently the only large site that Labour inherited from the Tories, which it's kept open, despite Sir Keir Starmer saying just before the election that it needs to close. The 2 other major sites identified by the Tories, RAF Scampton in Lincolnshire, have both, though that one and another one, have been abandoned by Labour. Maybe they needed to keep those open in retrospect. Get to the details in just a few moments. 7:36, let's turn to Christian May, Editor-in-Chief of City AM, for a business update and a borrowing update. We'll start with Christian, because those figures have come in for government borrowing, and they say...
Well, you've got to take into account that there are 2 months of the year, each year, where Treasury officials and government ministers can look at the monthly borrowing figures and think, gosh, I wish it was like that every month. And that's because in January and July, a huge burst of tax receipts coming in make those figures look a little better. So bear in mind that the June public sector borrowing figure was something like a record high, or highest 20 years or something. It was tens of billions of additional borrowing. And in June, it's come in at about 1.1 billion.
Ah.
And that looks quite rosy.
Good.
And that is because of the surge in tax receipts coming in particular the self-assessment income tax coming in and makes those figures look a little better. It should be noted, however, that this July still was actually lower than last July. So there are slightly lower borrowing amounts for the government this July than last July. But it's not a pretty picture when you take it over the course of the year. Something like 170 odd billion in borrowing from this time last year to today. It's an extraordinary amount, and that comes with consequences. And I have just received a lot of analyst notes in my inbox this morning from city economists, etc., and mostly all pointing out the same thing, but there's a spread in their expectations of where this is going to leave the Chancellor's headroom, fiscal headroom, come the budget. And just glancing through those various emails I've got, they range from the more optimistic of about sort of 12 to 15 billion pounds of tax rise is going to be required, right the way through to slightly more pessimistic 50 billion. So wow. Somewhere between that, you can throw a dart
spread
at it.
Yeah. And these are numbers coming out of the ONS, the Office for National Statistics. But there is a bit of a row going on behind the scenes between the ONS and the Treasury about the release of July retail sales data, in part because either the ONS doesn't think it's got the numbers right, or because the numbers are so bad they don't want to release them.
Well, I have seen some commentary sort of echoing that latter sentiment. I think, as you'll appreciate, it is almost always more cock-up than conspiracy. The ONS does struggle to pull together the most accurate figures in certain quarters. The public borrowing figures are likely to be pretty pretty accurate, although they do tend to revise them month to month. Where they are struggling at the moment is retail sales. Now, retail sales month on month are a hugely important part of our kind of map of economic data that guide not just our own perceptions and opinions, but policy decisions, Bank of England policy decisions. And the ONS is struggling with the quality and the calibre and the accuracy of that data. And they've said, probably fair play to them for admitting it, we need a bit more time to get to grips with this. The ONS has gone through some serious problems. Sir Robert Choate resigned last month as the chair of the UK Statistics Authority, which oversees the body, recognising that it needed new leadership. The government, various select committees and inquiries have said there are deep-seated issues with this. And it does matter. It matters hugely, as I say, because the calibre of this data goes on to seriously steer policy and Bank of England decisions. The Bank of England increasingly relying on its own assessment and its own data and its own surveys rather than relying on the ONS, which has also got trouble with things like the labour market statistics, etc. So there's a lot of frustration out there among economists in particular who say you have one job, you should be better at it.
And on where Rachel Reeves can get this money from, there's another new tax-raising plan detailed on the front page of the Telegraph. This time around the pension, because at present, pensioners are allowed to withdraw as much as 25% of their pension pot tax-free upon retirement, up to a cap of £268,000. It seems as if the Chancellor wants to reduce that amount quite significantly. Indeed, the Pensions Minister is previously quoted as saying that level could be just £40,000 before you start getting taxed on it.
I'm afraid this is deja vu. Almost precisely this time last year, the government was starting to drip out its ideas for the budget. And you remember the mood music then was that it was going to be terrible, and indeed it was. One of the things they dripped out last summer was that they were going to reduce the tax-free amount, the amount that you can pull out of your pension pot upon retirement without paying tax on that lump sum. One of the consequences of that was that people started to pull their money out, pull money out of their pension pots, get the maximum they could out before the threat of it being taxed. And then in the end, it wasn't, because it's deeply unpopular. And now here we are again. I mean, we've discussed a new tax idea every day this week.
I know.
I'm afraid. It's good fun. It's a sport if you're into it.
Yeah.
This is going to be the case now, right the way through to the budget. And we have seen property tax proposals, mansion tax proposals, inheritance tax proposals, gift tax proposals. Now this new threat of pension. I have to say, this is no way to run a budget process. I don't know whether they're softening people up or they're flying these kites and then people actually show some relief that they don't come to pass in October. But there will be behavioural consequences to this. The pension one in particular, you know, I think we'll see some pretty shaky movements in the housing market as people try to head off what might be a tax come October. And now I suspect people are going to say, I'm not going to risk it. I got away with it last year. I'm not going to risk it this year. She's coming for my pension. I'm going to start pulling that money out. So I think they are in some pretty dangerous territory here, flying all these kites. And by the way, I think it's a bad tax anyway.
Terrible. Christian, thank you. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. We'll talk about the situation in the Middle East in just a few moments' time. Khalid's in Edmonton first. Back to those asylum hotels. Khalid, hi.
Morning, Tom. I just think we're in danger of stigmatising more than white asylum seekers, aren't we, in these hotels? It's kind of, language is kind of dangerous when people say, oh, I don't want them to be next to me. It's a dangerous ground, Tom, in terms of if that's what we're saying. I mean, the real issue, as you correctly highlighted...
Do you think it's unreasonable for people to say, I'd be uncomfortable or nervous or upset about having an asylum hotel near me? Do you think that's an unreasonable thing?
On the basis of what, though?
On the basis of you don't know who these people are, on the basis of neither does the government know who these people are, and they're in a community which they have access to, and they might come from very, very different parts of the world with very, very different attitudes to liberty, freedom, freedom of expression, rights particularly of women.
But if you look at the evidence, if you look at it, these hotels have been in existence for a while now. If there was criminality, then, you know, if this was a widespread issue, then, you know, the police would be dealing with it. The reality, it isn't. There has been alleged, and I'd be careful, there has been alleged cases, and it's minor. But to kind of make that as a wide... To make that as a wide... No, but in terms of numbers, in terms of to make it a widespread thing where every single asylum hotel is a threat to our community, I think that's a bit stretch, isn't it?
All right. Khalid, appreciate the call. Thank you very much indeed. John, I'll come to you in a few moments. 7:43 is the time. Next.
We want to liberate ourselves and liberate the people of Gaza from the awful terror of Hamas.
Israel has entered the first stages of its invasion of Gaza City, the Israeli military has confirmed. They've taken control of the outskirts of the city, one of Hamas's last strongholds. This is despite much international condemnation. Lieutenant Colonel Avital Leibovich is a former IDF spokeswoman, now director of the American Jewish Committee in Tel Aviv. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. What is the aim of this operation on Gaza City?
Well, look, Israel is in a very, very difficult situation. On the one hand, we are aware that the condition of the hostages that are held, at least 20 are alive, is quite dire. I mean, we see the videos which Hamas has been releasing, and we see they're really on the brink of starvation. So on the one hand, we want to save them. On the other hand, there is also an understanding that such an operation can also endanger their lives. So there's no easy decision here that the cabinet took. Eventually, it took the decision to try and seize militarily 25% of Gaza, which Israel has not operated in yet. And this is the goal. Of course, it has prior stages, which include opening humanitarian corridors.
Seize for how long, though?
It's going to be a few months. The issue in Gaza is not the military capacity of Hamas as much as the underground facilities which Hamas has been building there for the last 20 years. So that's the main concern. The main concern is that under Gaza City, there is an entire city which is underground, which is either hosting terrorists or launchers, rockets, weapons, those kind of things. And the only way to handle this is with boots on the ground. So, of course, there's a lot of anxiety here in Israel of the lives that the soldiers, that will pay.
And indeed the lives of those in Gaza City, many of whom are being told that they have to move. You know what the criticism will be, Avital, that this is a form of ethnic cleansing.
No, I don't think that is the case, because we have proved in the past, for example, Israel operated just a year ago in Rafah. And again, the same method, it evacuated the people, let them move to humanitarian zones, and only then went inside Gaza. This is a clear indication that Israel has zero
interest. There were some humanitarian zones that people were told to go to that were hit by Israeli munitions, though.
Very scarce, and only in the case that they posed as an immediate threat, because Hamas, as we know, is using sometimes civilian areas as human shields, for example, storing rocket launchers. By the way, the rockets are still flying from Gaza to Israel. I know it's not reported, not breaking headlines, but a few days ago we had two rockets which hit a kibbutz in southern Israel, and last week as well. So Israel needs to eliminate that threat. There is no alternative, and bring the hostages home. This country is torn into pieces because there are still 50 hostages there. Everywhere you go in Israel, whether it's a supermarket or you drive on the road, there are pictures of hostages, yellow ribbons across the country, and we need to get this done.
Thank you for coming on the program, Lieutenant Colonel Avital Leibovich, former IDF spokesperson, now director of the American Jewish Committee in Tel Aviv. Coming up,
there are other forms of accommodation the previous government used, like former military bases. There was even a barge that was used. But really, the solution is to make sure all illegal immigrants are deported.
Kemi Badenoch telling her councillors to protect their communities in bringing legal challenges against these migrant hotels. We'll speak to her shadow Home Secretary, Chris Philp, after the 7:47 news headlines. Thomas Watts.
The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has urged more Tory councils to bring legal challenges over asylum hotels. Pupils across England, Wales and Northern Ireland are picking up their GCSE results this morning, and Israel's military says the preliminary phase of its attack on Gaza City has begun in its outskirts. LBC weather, cloud and sunny spells for most, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. On the M25, there are delays into the roadworks anti-clockwise before Junction 10 for the A3 at the Wisley Interchange. The recues in Colston on the A23 Brighton Road in both directions between Colston North and Purley. In New Cross, Hatcham Park Road is closed eastbound due to a building fire. That's from the A2 New Cross Road to Camplin Street. Things are slow on the M11 southbound before Junction 4 for the A406 North Circular Road. A lane is closed on the A13 in Chafford 100 westbound from North Stifford to Lakeside turnoff. That's because of a broken down vehicle. And buses are running instead of trains on Southern between Redhill and Tunbridge. That's due to engineering works.
The all-new LBC app. News your way. Download it for free from the App Store. This is LBC.
Hey parents, are you ready for the new term? At 2, we've got you covered for the big school shop. count on us for A-star quality uniforms at amazing prices. Don't miss out on a pack of two perfect white polos from £3 or a pack of two trousers with reinforced knees for £7. Discover the full range at Sainsbury's and 2.co.uk. Two works every time. Uniform prices from ages 3 to 6, subject to availability. Delivery charges may apply.
This is LBC.
Tesco Finest Cod. A different kettle of fish. Pan-fried with garlic, slowly baked in butter, or finished with a squeeze of lemon. It'll get you hooked either way. It's why only the finest cuts of wild-caught cod are selected for our delicate and flaky cod loins. Mm. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
OK.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. On rest every 2 hours too. I inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
7:51 the time. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Come back to your calls on these asylum hotels in just a few moments. But let's pick up on that story with Chris Philp, the Shadow Home Secretary and Conservative MP for South Croydon. Thank you for coming on the programme, Mr. Philp. Is the use of hotels to house asylum seekers wrong, sir?
Well, I think overall it is wrong because it's costing a lot of money and it's, you know, taking these hotels out of action. Let's remind ourselves why they're being used in the first place. It's because illegal immigrants are crossing the channel, then claiming asylum. So the way to fix this really is to stop the problem at source and stop the crossings, which in my view means deporting everybody who arrives illegally immediately that they get here, either to their country of origin if possible, or a safe third country if not. And then pretty soon, people will stop bothering to attempt the crossings in the first place.
If it's wrong to use hotels to house asylum seekers, why did you as a Home Office Minister sanction the use of the Bell Hotel in Epping as one of the hotels to be used?
Yeah, you're going back 5 or so years now, and it was used as an emergency measure. But we then, in government, the Conservatives, rightly decided to stop using that hotel for the reasons I've just mentioned.
You approved the use of the Park Inn Hotel in Glasgow. 400 asylum seekers moved into that hotel. Was that the wrong thing?
Well, to be clear, I didn't personally approve those.
You defended that decision.
But hotels were used previously.
So was that wrong?
The last government decided that it was wrong to use hotels, and that is why it instituted a policy of reducing them. Now, that started a couple of years, or 2 or 3 years ago. Hotel numbers were steadily reducing under the last government. In fact, about 200 hotels were closed down by the last government in the run-up to the last, in the sort of year or so before the last election. And had that rate of closure continued, by now, there would be no hotels at all. But unfortunately, the Labour government, after the election, did not continue with that programme of hotel closures. And in fact, in the 9 months after the election, the number of illegal immigrants claiming asylum in these hotels actually went up by about 3,000 because the Labour government did not continue the policy of closing those hotels down.
So the last Tory government decided it was wrong. Previous Tory governments didn't decide that because hotel accommodation increased. It exploded. There were 56,000 people in 2023, late 2023, still housed in hotels. So presumably you would say that former Tory governments in which you served got that wrong.
Yeah, there should not have been 56,000 people in hotels, and that is why, subsequent to that, very robust action was taken to reduce those numbers, which worked. The numbers halved subsequent to that,
and had that continued, you decide it was wrong, Mr.
And had
why
that.
Why did it take so many years to decide that this was the wrong thing to do?
Well, you'd have to ask the people that were in charge at the time. That was after my time as immigration minister. But a decision was taken to reduce the numbers. That worked, and the numbers were halved. But unfortunately, since Labour came to office, that trend has not continued. And in fact, the numbers in hotels in the 9 months after they came to office actually went up. But let's remind ourselves why it's happening. It's happening because illegal immigrants are crossing the channel in record ever numbers. Since the election, mm-hmm. the numbers have surged. This year so far has been the worst ever, the worst in history for illegal immigrants crossing the channel.
So far,
that's right. And indeed, the period since the election has also been the worst such period in history. And one of the reasons for that is that Labour cancelled the Rwanda deterrent before it even started with no replacement. Instead, they said, oh, we're going to smash the gangs. Well, that's now descended into sort of laughable farce. Now they're saying they're going to send 50 people a week to France. Well, I mean, that's not going to make any difference at all. The way you stop the boats coming in the first place, which really will fix the problem at source, is to say anyone that arrives illegally across the channel will get immediately removed, either back to their country of origin, if possible, or to a safe third country, if not. And then if you're in France and you know if you cross the channel, you're going to wind up mm-hmm. being immediately removed. I mean, common sense tells you people are going to
you're
not bother to...
less likely to do that journey. The deal that the Labour government is trying to institute with France, because France were implacably opposed to a returns agreement, particularly under the Conservative government, when you reduced hotel accommodation, which is true, when you reduced those
halved numbers,
where did those people go?
Well, some of those... you have to sort of track through the data, but some of those people would have been granted... asylum. Some of those people would have been denied asylum and then removed from the country. But just so back to your...
hardly any got removed from the country, Mr. Phil. Very, very few people got removed. You substituted hotels with houses of multiple occupancy. You just put them in flats.
Well, as I say, if someone's asylum claim is denied, and we tightened up the rules actually to make it harder to get asylum,
you stopped processing claims. The Rwanda plan meant that there were no claims processed after a particular date. You stopped bothering.
There was work being done to prepare for the Rwanda plan. That is exactly right. Now, and I think it was a catastrophic mistake by the Labour government to cancel that Rwanda plan just a few days before it was due to start.
It's the absolute height of hypocrisy to say, oh, well, they're not closing down the hotels. When you put people into hotels, the Conservative government over many years put thousands of people into hotels. You stopped processing claims, moved people out of hotels and stuck them in HMOs.
No, I've already explained that people whose asylum claims were denied would have been removed from the country. And I'll repeat the point. In the last 9 months of the last Conservative government, the numbers in asylum hotels halved. They went down by 200 hotels. And had the Labour government continued that after the election, there wouldn't be any hotels at all now. But look, I'm going to repeat the fundamental point, which is that we need to stop these illegal crossings completely. The Rwanda deterrent would have done that. Something very similar worked in Australia about 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. Actually, the Americans in the last 6 months have done something quite similar on their southern border. It was a huge mistake of Labour to cancel that deterrent before it started, just before it started, without any replacement. That is why numbers this year are the worst, so far this year, are the worst in history.
When Kemi Badenoch,
and that is why we've got a border crisis under Labour.
When Kemi Badenoch, your leader, tells her councillors, Conservative councillors, to take legal action against the government for those hotels in order to, quote, protect your community. Who from?
Well, I think there are concerns which Epping Council articulated in their legal action that putting hundreds of young men into the middle of a small community can have quite significant impacts. We've also seen reporting by various newspapers who have looked through court records showing that hundreds and hundreds of people living in these asylum hotels, who are almost entirely young men, by the way, have been charged with various criminal offences. And that is of concern to local councils, and it's of concern to the public as well. But you know, to get to the heart of this, to really stop this problem happening, you've got to stop the crossings. And that is why Labour have made such a big mistake by allowing these crossings to reach record ever levels this year. They have a border crisis, which is turning into a public security or public safety crisis as well.
The protect your community line, though, might appear to some as to cast aspersions on absolutely everybody who crosses and claims asylum, that they are all somehow a threat.
Well, I don't think that is the insinuation, although, of course, everybody who's crossed the channel has done so illegally, because it is illegal to enter the UK in that way, because they're leaving from a safe country, France, right? There's not a war.
Well, they've got to have their asylum claim processed first in order to determine whether or not they're here illegally.
That's not true, actually. Entering the country without leave is a criminal offence, contrary to Section 24 of the Immigration Act 1971. There is a protection if you're coming directly from a place of danger, but I think you would agree France is not a place of danger. There's no war going on.
There's no legal requirement, though, to claim asylum in the first safe country they come to.
No, but you are allowed to impose penalties, including criminal penalties, on people who enter a country illegally if they're not coming directly from a place of danger. So it is right to describe everyone crossing the channel as having entered illegally. That's quite an important point.
So what did the Tories do about that?
Well, we first of all got the numbers down by a third in 2023, and we had the Rwanda plan ready to go.
But if they're all here illegally anyway, before Rwanda plan, why didn't you arrest them? Why didn't you put them in prison?
The point I'm making is that the Rwanda plan, or something similar to it, where everybody who arrives gets immediately removed, will act as a deterrent.
Yes, but if it
was
always the case they were coming in illegally, you didn't do anything about it until you dreamt up the Rwanda plan, which is only pretty recently towards the back end of a Conservative government.
Well, we did get the numbers down by a third in 2023.
You say they're here illegally.
Well, I just said, we got the numbers down by a third, and I think hundreds of people were prosecuted for facilitating illegal immigration. They were prosecuted. The National Crime Agency, I think, had some of their top operations directed against people smuggling organisations, which is illegal as well. That's illegal as well. But the main point is we need to stop this happening in the first place by preventing the illegal crossings. The only way to do that is by making sure that the crossings are pointless. I've said it already, I'll say it again, by making sure everybody who arrives gets immediately removed, and then nobody will bother attempting the crossing. You mentioned the government's deal with France, which is their latest gimmick, just like the Smash the Gangs gimmick a year ago, which you don't hear them talk about anymore. Now, sending 50 people a week to France, which amounts to about 6% of arrivals, is obviously no deterrent, because by implication, 94% of people can stay. And the difference with, you know, the Rwanda scheme, by contrast, or something like it, would have seen 100%, or very close to 100%, of people being removed. We tabled a plan again like that in Parliament a few weeks ago, but Labour voted against it. And their weakness on this is why they've lost control of the borders, and why this year so far has been the worst year in history for illegal crossings. Labour is presiding over a borders crisis.
Chris Philp is the Shadow Home Secretary and Conservative MP for South Croydon. Listening to Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Coming up.
When you look at the figures around attainment for white working class kids in our country, less than 20% get a strong pass at English or maths at GCSE.
On GCSE Results Day, the Education Secretary says she is appalled at the failing of white working class pupils by the school system. How and why? Also...
Excuse me, are you okay?
Yeah.
Is this you're playing your music out loud?
And?
Everyone in this carriage hates you.
Finally, a train line taking action against those who play their music repugnantly loudly on the train carriage. We'll applaud the train line doing so. And...
What you did encouraged activity which threatened or endangered life and therefore falls within Category 1.
The Mail Online reports this morning that Lucy Connolly is to be released from prison later today, sentenced for a tweet in the Southport riots. We'll get the details.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Conservative-run councils have been told to take the same steps as in Epping to close asylum hotels. A temporary injunction was granted earlier this week to stop the Bell Hotel in the town being used to accommodate migrants. The Tory leader, Kemi Badenoch, has told other authorities to consider their own legal challenges. The Shadow Home Secretary, Chris Phil, who's been speaking to Tom, has rejected claims of hypocrisy.
But hotels were used previously.
So was that wrong?
The last government decided that it was wrong to use hotels, and that is why it instituted a policy of reducing them. Now, that started a couple of years, or 2 or 3 years ago. Hotel numbers were steadily reducing under the last government. In fact, about 200 hotels were closed down.
Labour has dismissed Kemi Badenoch's letter to councils as desperate and hypocritical nonsense. Hundreds of thousands of pupils in England, Wales and Northern Ireland are opening their GCSE results. They've been warned they could face tougher competition for places at sixth form colleges this year. They are expecting a bumper intake because of demographic changes. Israel says it started laying the groundwork on the outskirts of Gaza City for its planned ground offensive. Around 60,000 reservists are being called up as part of the operation. The head of the UN has renewed calls for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. A woman who was jailed for inciting racial hatred in the aftermath of the Southport attack is reportedly set to be released. Lucy Connolly's 31-month prison term has been criticised by some as too harsh, but was defended by Sir Keir Starmer earlier this year. Connolly used a social media post to call on followers to set fire to hotels housing asylum seekers. Official figures show government borrowing slowed to a lower than expected £1.1 billion in July. A rise in self-assessed income tax payments helped increase tax receipts for the month. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 92.88. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, a mixture of cloud and sunny spells, some isolated light showers in the north and east, a high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNCs apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you, 8:05 the time on Thursday, August the 21st. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Hope we find you very well indeed. Coming up...
This feels like two-tier justice, and when you compare it to other sentences, indeed for violent crimes, the fact that she's going to remain behind bars for this tweet just seems quite extraordinary.
She's out. Reports this morning that Lucy Connolly, jailed for 31 months for a tweet during the summer Southport riots, is leaving prison as early as this morning. Was her sentence unfair? Also...
The older you are, the more likely you are to say that, yes, I would support this fine for those who are being noisy on public transport.
I'll tell you what, it's about time too. A rail line is now set to impose fines of as much as £90 on people playing music loudly on the trains, putting their feet up on the seat and vaping. I applaud it. I think it's a great... At last, someone's doing this. I get a train twice a day, every single day, and the lack of basic manners is genuinely appalling. Fine them all.
Call 0345 60 60 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I tell you what, I'm really feeling it this morning. I think it's perhaps it's because I'm just imbibing the nervous energy of some 23 years ago. When, like it is maybe happening in your household, I got driven off to school to go and open the brown envelope that contained my GCSE results. And no, look, it doesn't determine the rest of your life. Of course it doesn't determine the rest of your life. So it doesn't go your way? Okay, fine. If it does go your way, fantastic. Well done. Congratulations. But it's a heck of a moment. You don't forget it. That nervous bead of sweat. Have you done the work that you needed to do? Will you get the numbers that... Numbers now, there were letters back in the day, but will you get the numbers that you really, really wanted? It seems as though it's going to be a tough year, though, for a particular cohort of pupils. A failure to ensure that white working class children succeed is holding Britain back, the education secretary has said today. She warns that 4/5 of children from white working class backgrounds were falling short in the English and math skills required to get on in life. She said that demographic had been let down and said that the UK's productivity was suffering as a result. Writing in the Telegraph, she says there is one statistic that stands above the rest. In 2024, only 19% of white British working class children achieved a strong pass in maths and English GCSE. This data goes back to 2017. Alarmingly, it looks almost identical today to how it did then. It's appalling. And I won't stand by and watch those numbers continue to grow. It's not just the life chances of those children that are being damaged. It's also the health of our society as a whole. Swathes of human capability and productivity lost. Who is to blame for that? Or what is to blame for that? Why is this continuing to happen? And when we say white British working class children, what does that really mean? I don't think it's not about class. Class has got nothing to do with it. This is entirely about money. It's about the socio-economic conditions in which you grow up. Poor white British children fare worse at school than their richer counterparts. Isn't that the reality? And if so, why is that the reality? Dr. Rebecca Montacute is Research Director at the Social Market Foundation, policy expert on educational inequality and social mobility. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme, Rebecca. Why does this continue to happen? Is the Education Secretary right? Morning.
Yeah, absolutely. So we know at every stage of a young person's educational journey, those who are living in poverty, and that's what we're talking about here in the data for these children, at every stage of the education system, they fall behind their peers. So it starts even before they ever set foot in the school gate. And then throughout their time at school, those gaps between the poorest and richest children widen as they go through the school system and then out into the workplace. Now, there are failures at every point of that system. One is the number of children who are living in poverty to start. If you haven't been able to eat properly, if you are worried and stressed in the home because of poverty, that will impact how you can perform when you get into the classroom. That obviously makes sense that we would expect that. Mm-hmm. And then there are also differences in the schools that people can access. So obviously there's the private and state divide. But even within state schools, we find that actually they're very socially economically segregated. So some schools will have lots and lots of kids from better off backgrounds because of the house prices of the schools. Near those schools. We see that divide in what schools they can access and also in wider support that parents can provide. So things like extra tutoring, whether or not they're able to do like wider support activities for their children if they do fall behind. So it's every single part of that system.
What do we mean by poor?
By what, sorry?
By poor. What defines poor in this context?
Yeah, so this is measured by children who are eligible for free school meals, right. And that will be the children who are living in, you know, the kind of worst conditions in terms of the money available to their parents.
And when the Education Secretary talks about the failure of the school system, if I were a teacher reading this, having coming to the end of my summer holidays and gearing up to the GCSE result, I feel that was rather a bit of a punch down. Somehow it's my fault. I've failed this cohort of children.
Oh, I would absolutely stress that this is not about the performance of teachers. And actually, the teachers who are operating in schools that have, say, very high proportions of children living in poverty absolutely go above and beyond in terms of what they provide for those children in really challenging situations. You know, there's been reports of teachers actually doing the laundry for students coming into school, of buying them extra kind of things that they need to be able to work in the classroom out of their own money sometimes. There are, you know, those teachers are absolutely not the ones who are failing in the system.
Dr. Rebecca Montacute, thank you for your time. Research Director at the Social Market Foundation, policy expert on educational inequality and social mobility. 12 past 8 at the time, Dr. Francis Gilbert is Head of Education at Goldsmiths University, a former teacher, author of the book Working the System, How to Get the Very Best Out of State Schools, The Parents' Guide. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme, Francis. Is this the parents' responsibility, do you think?
I think it's a lot of people's responsibility, not just the parents, isn't it? Obviously, parents play a vital role, we know, in the way in which children do at school. And irrespective of social class, the research shows that, if a parent is supportive of a school, supportive of a child's education, that child will do well. Mm-hmm. I would echo so much of what Rebecca has just said, to sum up, she points out that, the system itself is not structured in a way that's helpful for particular types of children from poorer backgrounds, maybe neurodivergent children, and that, the lack of resources in schools can have an effect. The picture is patchy. So, for example, London schools have done amazingly well, and many children from poorer backgrounds do massively outperform.
Well, let me ask you about those
backgrounds in the rest of the country.
Yeah, let me ask you about that.
Yeah.
Because here the Education Secretary is pointing to white British, she says working class, but let's say kids on free school meals. What about non-white kids in the same financial situation? They're on free school meals. Do those non-white kids perform better, the same, worse than white working class children?
The picture is again very various. Some ethnic groups do much better, others do not. And again, I'm reluctant at this point to sort of isolate particular ethnic groups, but it is varied. I would say the vital thing from a London point of view, you being a London radio station,
the London
challenge that was set up in the noughties by and the funding essentially carried on with the coalition government, so it was a multi-government thing, has had a massive effect. And, children since 2008 in London have done, from all backgrounds, from white and other ethnic backgrounds, have done really well from poor backgrounds, because the resourcing and the targeting of those children has been there. Whereas across the country, the resourcing, say, for example, in a county like Northumberland, which I know pretty well because a lot of my family live there, has been really poor, and schools have suffered. They haven't got the kind of resources that the London schools have got. And so we do need a more equitable system for that. I would say we also need to think about reforming the exam system. I personally think that the GCSEs are an antiquated exam. They were for when most people left school at 16 in the post-war period. Now every child leaves school at 18. We need to really have an exam system that motivates our children, particularly around vocational education. We have a massive skills gap, which is the result of both Labour and Tory governments over the last three or four decades. They've not resourced vocational education properly.
On the academic element. Dr. Gilbert, thank you. Francis Gilbert, Head of Education at Goldsmiths University. It's an interesting comparison. It's probably a more interesting comparison to do non-white poor kids versus white poor kids, isn't it, when it comes to educational outcomes. So what role does ethnicity play? It's probably quite hard to say. But there is a feeling, perhaps, that among some communities, the value of a good education, the value of getting good grades, is actually very high. And mum and dad make sure that little Timmy knows that doing well at school is part of the key to a successful life. Maybe that's broken a bit. Maybe there is a bit of a break on social mobility, upward social mobility gained through good education, getting good grades, because your kid gets the grades, they go off to university, they get saddled with debt, they come out of university having done okay, and there's no job for them. So the social mobility doesn't really happen as much. Why is it that apparently white British working class children are being failed, let down, the Education Secretary says, by the school system? 0345 6060 973. Is that true in your experience? Get your calls in a few moments. Coming up.
Excuse me, are you okay?
Yeah.
Is this you're playing your music out loud?
And?
Everyone in this carriage hates you.
And here come the fines. A train line set to impose hefty fines on people playing music aboard their trains in what the operator describes in an effort to make journeys as enjoyable as possible for passengers. Not before time. get into the details. After the 8:17 news headlines now, Thomas Watts.
The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has urged more Tory councils to bring legal challenges over asylum hotels. Pupils across England, Wales and Northern Ireland are picking up their GCSE results this morning, and Israel's military says the preliminary phase of its attack on Gaza City has begun in its outskirts. LBC weather, cloud and sunny spells for most, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. On the M21, lane is closed eastbound due to a broken down van before Junction 4 for Leybourne. On the M25, there are delays into the roadworks anti-clockwise before Junction 10 for the A3 at the Wisley interchange. There are queues in Colston North on the A23 Brighton Road in both directions between Smitham Downs Road and Purley. In New Cross, Hatcham Park Road is closed eastbound due to a building fire from the A2 New Cross Road to Camplin Street. A lane is closed on the A13 in Chafford Hundred westbound from North Stifford to Lakeside Turnoff. That's because of a broken down vehicle. And buses are running instead of trains on Southern between Redhill and Tunbridge due to engineering works.
This is LBC.
You've arrived. Your dream holiday. You got there for less thanks to comparing flight prices on Kayak. An idyllic local restaurant nestled in the cliffs. A peaceful pool with your own private sunbed. This is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare flight prices from hundreds of travel sites and bag a great deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
This is LBC.
Hey, Mum. So, you know we met Zara, my financial advisor? Yeah, from St. James's Place. Well, she drafted our plan so you can get that bungalow near me. Oh, and Sam, that lovely carer we found, will drop in. And I can bring over my signature shepherd's pie. Oi!
Big decisions call for invaluable advice. Visit St. James's Place to find your one-to-one financial advisor. St. James's Place Wealth Management PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. SJP approved 19th of Feb 25.
Get a step closer to winning a huge £20,000. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Win Plus, great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walker's. Delicious.
Renault. An electric car grant is good. But an electric car grant on an award-winning Renault, where we do all the paperwork for you. Incroyable. Renault range now available with the electric car grant and 0% APR representative. Search Renault electric car grant. Order by 30th of September 2025. Exclude Channel Islands, PCP mobilized financial services, minimum deposit required, 18 plus, T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
20 past 8 at the time, Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Good luck to you if you are going to collect your GCSE results today. Massive morning in those households for whom this is a thing. The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, though, is worried about the failure to ensure that white working class children succeed in their English and maths specifically. She warns that that cohort is being let down by the school system. How and why? Shima's in Barkingside. Shima.
Hello.
Hello, Shima.
Hi, good morning. Okay, I'm going to make a couple of points, and that would help the government. The reason why these youngsters have no interest in study, what have you, so there shouldn't be a no benefit between 18 to 25. What should really happen is when they fail the GCSEs, and those children should be geared towards the apprenticeship, like work. Okay, and that is, I'm not saying send them to the employers because they won't take them. In schools, they need to build up, like, say, hairdressing, carpentry, anything that the child is interested in. And then the school should give them a pocket money for the upkeeps. And that way, they will learn the trade. There'll be no benefit. There'll be no incentive. Oh, well, I'll go out. I'll go to the job center. I'll sign up. I'll get £60. What do they do with the £60? McDonald's, pizzas, new trainers, you know. So this is where it has to stop. And the schools needs to, they have the list which children are going to.
Well, hang on. I think the point, Shima, is less that These kids' grades mean that they shouldn't bother with any further academic study past 16.
No,
I think the point that the education secretary is making is there is a huge amount of potential here that isn't being tapped into. And the potential is their academic ability is actually far better than their results suggest, but that it isn't being allowed to grow.
Right. This is what used to happen in India. Now, every 4 months, 4 or 5 months, every child in the class, without being, nobody told them they were going to have exam or the nobody. So they would give them a test of whatever they've learned for the last. If the children who are failing, they would be get extra tuition.
Right.
From the school.
From the school, but not from the parents.
No, from the parents, it's difficult for the parents. The thing is, in this country, everything's expensive. Both parents just leave home 7 o'clock in the morning, come back in the evening.
But do you think whether it's funding tuition, which is expensive and not everyone can do it, and you're right about people getting up and going to work all the time and blah, 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 the attitude that says getting a good education is really important, so we are going to make sure... little Shima, that you do your homework. We are going to make sure that you try your best at school and that you take it seriously and that you turn up.
Yeah, the thing is, Asian parents, I don't know if you're not going to like this, but I'm going to tell you this. Asian parents are far, far more stricter than English parents, 100%. So if a girl is not home by 8 o'clock, they would know where the child is. I'm sorry, but the English children do get a lot of, like, freedom.
It's too lax.
Yeah, they are. They just, I think they put everything on, or what child wants to do, child will do.
All right. Shima, appreciate it. Thank you. That is the sort of historic, it's not a trope, is it? I guess it's a kind of stereotype that particularly parents of Indian heritage or Indian background, far more, in that sense, brutal about saying, no, you are going to do your homework, because education really, really, really matters. You are going to try your very hardest because it's absolutely as critical in making sure you have a better life. Is that a stereotype that's true and is therefore part of the reason why white, quote, working class children are not getting the grades that they ought to be getting? Vic, I'll come to your call in just a few moments. 8:25 the time. Next! Is that Madonna? I don't want to hear it. Get rid of it. I don't want to get rid of it. Turn it off. I don't want to... I'm sitting on the train. I don't want to hear that. I'm trying to listen to my own thing. Irish Rail is set to impose a hefty fine on people playing music aboard their trains in what the operator describes as an effort to make journeys as enjoyable as possible. This is a crackdown set to span several areas widely considered to be antisocial, including playing music or videos out loud, vaping, and passengers putting feet on seats. Irish Rail communications manager Barry Kenny insisted train inspectors have and will issue penalties of €100, 86 quid, if passengers fail to follow these guidelines. Paul Kohler is a Liberal Democrat transport spokesperson and MP for Wimbledon. Thank you for coming on the programme, Paul. This is an idea that the Lib Dems want to see brought over here, don't they? How much would the fines be and for what, sir? Morning.
Good morning. Yes, we've been pushing this for a number of months. I asked the Prime Minister about it in PMQs. He was supportive, but then the Labour government voted against my amendment in the bus bill in committee stage. The level of the bill, of the fine, I expect £100, up to £1,000 is what we've said. But I'm sure that would be the maximum, not always charged, of course.
Who would police this?
Well, we have British Transport Police. I've also been talking to South West Rails about guards. Guards, particularly when out of busy periods, could walk through the carriages. That we don't use our guards enough on the railways. They were receptive to that idea. And simply a guard saying to someone being antisocial, look, would you consider what you're doing? Can you think of other people? Would have a huge effect. We don't use our guards enough on the railways. We should use them more.
I spend... probably an entire working day all in on trains, going back and forth, commuting back and forth from where I live into London. I don't know that many guards would want to say to a group of people who are playing their music very loudly, listen, can you stop? And here's a fine of 100 quid. I don't think they'd want to do that.
I'm not saying they should give the fine. I think you're wrong. I go on the trains a lot, of course. You often hear the guards saying, if you have any problems, I'm in the middle carriage. If you're suffering antisocial behaviour, if someone is intimidating you, you can't get to the middle carriage. Simply having guards walking through would change the tone of railways, of trains, particularly in the day, in the time when it's quieter. I think it would make a huge difference. I don't want guards having to confront someone violent, but simply saying to someone being careless, not thinking, would make a huge difference. And South West Rail were very, very appreciative of that idea. They definitely want to go down that path. And it might...
I can just see the arguments happening, though, Paul. Oh, listen, guard, it was only on a little bit. It was only on for a few seconds. I'll give us a break. I'm not going to pay your fine. And they get off the train. They don't bother.
Hold on. I'm not saying the guard should impose the fine. I'm saying the guard should simply remind people of their legal duties. Ultimately...
Who imposes the fine?
Sorry?
Who imposes the fine?
The fines would be by British Transport Police. It would be a fixed penalty notice. The point is, you don't have to impose the fine to stop people doing much of it. The point is, having that fine there is a part of the regime. And I think you shouldn't be defeated about the idea of people being reminded to act civilly. I think that's good. That's useful. Someone with authority, like a guard, can say that.
Good to speak to you, Paul Kohler. Thank you, Liberal Democrat Transport Spokesperson and MP for Wimbledon. I was on the train 2-3 months ago, something like that, sitting minding my own business in the carriage, headphones on, obviously, and there was a lady on a sort of thing of four opposite who was taking a call on loudspeaker, just having this conversation with someone on loudspeaker, so the entire carriage can now hear this call. And even with headphones on, people are looking at each other going, oh, my God, rolling their eyes. I thought, am I going to say something? I thought, yeah, I'm going to say something. So I said, listen, I'm really sorry. Is there any chance you could take it off loudspeaker? Because I don't really want to hear your phone call. Is there any chance you... And she said, why don't you mind your own business? I was like, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to mind my own business, but your business is getting up in my business's face. So please can you end your business being spoken out loud and... She wouldn't do it, and she carried on with the call and edit. I'd never understand that attitude. Never. So a guard walking through the train to say, actually, he's right. Could you keep your conversation to yourself? Could you take it off loudspeaker? Is that going to make a blind bit of difference? 03456060973, the number. Coming up...
What he did on the 29th of July last year has caused such shock and revulsion to the whole nation that it must be viewed as being at the very extreme level of crime.
Justice Goose sentencing Axel Rudabakana in January for murdering three young girls in Southport last year. The Sun reports this morning, though, he's won back privileges, including a TV and DVD player, to encourage him to behave. This is despite him hurling boiling water at a guard in May. Look at the rights and wrongs of that decision. 8:30, news headlines now, Thomas Watts.
The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has urged more Tory-run councils to bring legal challenges over asylum hotels. She says they should take the same steps as in Epping, where the authority secured a temporary injunction earlier this week. Pupils across England, Wales and Northern Ireland are opening their GCSE results. Teenagers are being warned to expect tougher competition for sixth form places because of demographic changes. Israel's military says the preliminary phase of its attack on Gaza City has begun in its outskirts. The head of the UN has renewed his call for an immediate ceasefire in the territory. LBC weather, a mixture of cloud and sunny spells, some light showers in the north and east, a high of 21 degrees.
This is LBC.
A southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Would anyone like some Bourneville dark chocolate?
Is it so dark the aftertaste lasts for a week?
No.
Does it taste really, really complicated?
What? Is it saturated in nibs?
So dark it comes with a therapist?
To the uneducated palate, does it taste like burnt tyre?
Would scientists compare the taste to dark matter?
Is it artisanal in all caps?
Are the tasting notes... gloom.
No, no pretentiousness, no complexity, no bitterness. Just smooth dark chocolate from Cadbury. Cadbury Bourneville. Made to be enjoyed, not endured.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T. Top up on island fuel. Or rest every 2 hours too. I inspect tire pressure and tread. P. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. Oh, yes, oh, yes.
A safe trip begins with T.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Because you never know what little pickles they'll get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
8:32 the time. Talk about Axel Rudabekana, the Southport murderer, getting a TV and DVD privileges despite chucking boiling water at a guard in May. We'll get into the details of that in a few moments. We'll speak to the school's standard minister, too, in about 20 minutes or so. Catherine McKinnon will be here on GCSE results day, but on a day where the education secretary says white working-class British children are being failed by the school system. Dave's in Portsmouth on this. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Yeah, good, sir. Is this true? And if so, why is it true? How's it true?
You can sort of just take ethnicity out of it. It's literally with money. So, my role within the... I work with the local authority. My role is to look at the GCSE results or any attainment of disadvantaged versus non-disadvantaged groups. And I feel like we sort of get focused on the GCSE outcome, which, to be honest, by that time, it's too late. If you go back to the sort of very first assessments those children do when they're 4 or 5 years old in, like, reception, that early years foundation stage,
yeah,
can quite easily plot a difference between those children that are eligible for free school meals or with social workers or whatever, but tend to be more, you know, less affluent. And you can look at the results of those children compared to those that aren't in that disadvantaged situation. And then straight away, there's a massive gap. I mean, with nationally, it's around about...
And why do you think that is, Dave?
I'm doing all right for myself, and I've got that knowledge to, like, I've got a young daughter. If she wasn't doing particularly very well at nursery, I know the questions to ask, and I know the sort of work and things that I can do to try and improve her results.
But isn't that the point, sir? Isn't that the point? There you are as a concerned parent saying, how can I help improve my daughter's chances? What can I do at home with her? How much more should we read together? Should we, you know, do this, that and the other? I'm not wishing to cast aspersions on everybody, but isn't there perhaps a bit of a feeling that there are some parents who don't mind, care or are just not interested really in the school performance of their kid?
But again, it tends to be those parents that had a rough journey through school themselves, and sort of if I was to go to nursery and I get a report from my daughter to say, okay, she's not doing particularly well in these areas, okay, on your way. So there is a bit of a pressure on schools as well to rather than me having to say, okay, what can I do? What can I do? Where can I go to? Be able to put a bit of information, regardless of whether I'm asking that question or not, to give me that bit of information. And again, it does come to, you know, I work a decent job. I do the okay hours. And again, this is very big averages here. If you are less affluent, chances are you're going to have hours potentially all over the place. You
might which unfortunately might be is true. But again, is it just the white poorer kids that are experiencing that? Or is that true across every sort of ethnic background, religious background, whatever, if you are struggling financially? Dave, thank you very much indeed for the call. Here's Jane. Tom, it's not the school letting down children, it is the parents. Surely this is obvious. Children who are encouraged and helped with their learning are clearly at an advantage. It is nothing to do with money, she says. Tony, I'll come to your call in just a few moments. 8:36 the time. Next.
We've already come really close to it at Franklin. Is that one of my colleagues will be murdered on duty because of the lack of protection and because senior leaders are not proactive enough and keep appeasing prisoners.
The Sun reports this morning that the Southport murderer, Axel Rudabekana, has won back privileges, including a TV and DVD player, apparently to encourage him to behave. He hurled boiling water at a guard in May, but has had his regime raised from basic to standard. It means he gets more money to spend in the canteen, plus time out of his cell. Shoaib Khan is a human rights lawyer. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. I wonder what you make of this change.
Hi. I'm not sure why it's so newsworthy, to be honest. Obviously, it's been raised from basic, which was restricted, which was unusual in the circumstances, to standard. Standard basically means the conditions that everyone has. And particularly considering his situation, I mean, obviously, unspeakably vile crimes he committed, obviously. But he has been in prison for a minimum of 52 years. So during that time, you know, I don't think there was an additional requirement that he'd be tortured or mistreated or abused in some way, or somehow be, you know, subjected to some conditions that are subhuman, or somehow, you know, make it as uncomfortable as possible for him during those 52 years. So obviously, you know, again, he tried to commit an offence. Luckily, it turned out, you know, I don't think the prison officer was particularly scolded. You know, he was taken to hospital, as we hear, just sort of as a precautionary measure. He did come back.
He tried to throw boiling water into prison guard.
Yes.
It doesn't matter whether he was hurt or not. That gives you an indication that this is a violent individual, doesn't it?
Of course. But I just don't see why, you know, depriving him of, you know, £10 extra for the canteen or...
Because it's a punishment. Here's the thing. If you act in a violent and disrespectful manner, you get punished for it.
Yes, but not permanently, not long term, especially when you're locked up for 52 years. So, of course, yeah, he was punished for a while. And now he's, you know, he's come back to the standard... level of perks that all prisoners get, and that's the point. So he was punished. It's not as if he wasn't. And to suggest that he's somehow being brought back to standard level as a bribe, I just don't understand. Standard is what all prisoners get. He obviously, you know, committed an offence. He misbehaved. He was punished for it. So I just don't see what are we saying for 52 years. Now he should only have, you know, little pocket money. He shouldn't be able to speak to his family. He shouldn't be allowed out of his cell at all. So obviously, I mean, even then in prison standard, what that means is, you know, you're out of your cell for a longer period of time. You're allowed access to the gym. You have a television. Access to a television. So I just don't see what the issue is here, really.
Do you suspect that if he is to misbehave again or try anything violent again, that those it would be right to remove those perks?
It would. I mean, to be honest, I'm not sure I see the point of those, especially when it's someone who's locked up for a minimum of 52 years.
You don't see the point of removing the perks?
Yes, I don't really, because I don't see what the point
again,
is.
Again, sorry.
Yes.
Mr. Khan, he threw boiling water at a prison guard, and you don't think that someone might say, actually, you're not going to have your TV this week?
Yeah, no, but what are we doing then? What's the point? The point is, in this country...
The point is you're trying to encourage him to behave in a manner that doesn't mean that means he isn't going to throw boiling water at prison guards anymore.
But someone who's behaved in the way he did for the, you know, the offence for which he was in prison, and after that, we know, even in prison, this is the way he's... do we think that, you know, that's going to happen? One week he can't see his favourite television, he might think, okay, I might as well, you know, let me start being a decent human being from now on.
Well, that does normally work. I mean, when you're just even on the basis of parenting children, if you take something away from them that they really want in order for them to behave better, they sometimes think it's a good idea to behave better.
Yeah, no, it does. But the point is, I mean, I don't think we can compare this individual. He was quite young at the time to a normal child. Can we really? Obviously, there's a lot going through in his mind. And, you know, that we can see demonstrating his behavior. That's not...
Okay, so what punishment should he receive for throwing boiling water at a prison guard?
Yeah, no, so the point is, firstly, I mean, I have to say, I think we lock up far too many people for far too long in this country. Secondly, there are many...
Well, not him, surely. I mean, Mr. Khan, come on.
No, of course, of course, right. Of course. I mean, of course. But obviously, you know, our prisons are full. You know, I mean, I think that is not this government, but for decades now, I think that's the sign of a failing government. Or generally, you know, you just gave the example of a child. You know, if you just lock up your child every time he misbehaves, then that just shows you're failing as a parent. And I think that's the point here.
I don't know why you're bringing that in. Most parents, and I'm sure yours did too, Mr. Khan, if you did something wrong, they took something away from you until you made your behaviour better and you got it back. Right, so I ask you again, what punishment should this man receive in prison for throwing boiling water at a prison guard?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, after 52 years at a minimum, and potentially he doesn't know, we don't know if he'll ever be released.
Right, so nothing, nothing happens. He throws boiling water at a prison guard and nothing happens to him. Carry on.
No, I mean, I'm not saying carry on, but the point is...
So what should happen, Ms. Khan? Third time, what should happen? What punishment should befall this man for throwing boiling water at a prison guard?
No, so I mean, if there's any restrictions that prevent that happening again, if we can look at the security measures in the prison and see how did that happen? Even that, I mean, as far as we understand, I think that was through a hatch. So, you know, if we can look at what security... measures can be taken to prevent that happening again. But I don't see, you know, after locking up for 52 years, what additional punishment is going to do. Do we really think after it was taken away for a few weeks now, do we think it's never going to happen again? Do we think it's going to serve its purpose?
The reason why he's got it back is because he hasn't done it again.
Yeah, no, but that's what I'm saying. Do you think he's not going to do it again? Have we actually prevented it? Do you think it's going to make any difference to this
individual? Well, I hope so, but as you're right to say, you don't know. And in the event that it does happen again, his punishment is that he has these privileges removed.
Yeah, no, but the point is, shouldn't we be focusing more to make sure it doesn't happen again, rather than every time he does it, then we punish him. The point is,
you keep punishing him until he doesn't do it.
I don't think it's going to work for an individual like that. That's what I'm saying. Someone, you know, who committed the offences that he did, the reason why he's in there, do we think now, you know, depriving him of his TV or reducing, you know, the phone time with his family, do we really think that's going to make a difference to him now? And suddenly he'll say, oh, well, you know, I'm so desperate to watch the television show I wanted to that, you know, let me start behaving myself for the next 50 years now. I just don't think that's going to happen. But another thing a point I do want to make is obviously there's many aims to a prison system or the reason we send people to prison. One of them, of course, is retribution, which is what we generally focus on just on this country. We need to punish this individual,
yes,
somehow avenge ourselves. But what about rehabilitation? What about, reducing reoffending?
Sure.
All the other aims of a prison, none, yes, of that ever happens. What we do actually see, obviously, like I keep saying, this person, we don't know if he'll ever be released anyway.
No.
But what we actually see is people who go to prison once, actually,
yep, you're right about that. The rehabilitation in prisons is not good. There's a high reoffending rate, particularly for shortened sentences. You're right about that. That is a separate issue to the privilege taken away from a very violent criminal who is trying to hurt prison guards in that particular prison. I've got to leave it there, Shoaib Khan. Thank you. You are a human rights lawyer. Natty's in Tunbridge Wells. Natty.
Oh, that's disgusting listening to that guy talk. Sorry. He shouldn't be getting any privileges at all whatsoever. He's taken 3 innocent girls' lives and he intended to harm more. And he's throwing boiling water at prison officers. And he gets things like that. That's not okay. This world is absolutely sick. In my eyes, sorry. You shouldn't be getting anything at all.
Well, you've heard from that human rights lawyer that this won't work, that it's not going to change his behaviour, so just carry on as normal. He chucks boiling water at a prison guard. Well, you up the security for the prison guards. You don't deal with him.
No, people that kill people, they shouldn't be getting any privileges at all. Go back to the days when they couldn't... You're in prison. You're in prison for a reason. You shouldn't be getting all the benefits of extra money to buy stuff and you've got a TV in your room. It shouldn't be like that at all. That's going to rehabilitate people because they're not going to be getting all the privileges that they are inside.
I just don't understand, Natty. I've got to be... Imagine hearing that as a prison guard. The danger that you put yourself in, day out, some absolute troglodyte is spitting at you or hurling boiling water at you, or, you know, some awful sort of fashioning weapons out of cutlery, and in this man's world, nothing would happen. No punishment would happen within the prison because you've already got 50 years behind bars. Absolutely terrible.
It's disgusting. And he's saying that he was young and everything. He knew what he was doing. He had every intention to do what he'd done. And even inside, he had every intention of throwing boiling water, knowing that it's going to hurt someone really bad, and just so he can get a TV and stuff. It's not... It's everything's messed up here. It's not all right.
Natty, appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed for the call. From one prison to another.
What you did encouraged activity which threatened or endangered life and therefore falls within Category 1.
The Mail is reporting that Lucy Connolly, who was handed a 31-month sentence for a tweet during the Southport riots, is to be released from prison today. Was that sentence too long? Get into the details of that later. 8:45, news headlines. Thomas Watts.
Tory-run councils have been told to take the same steps as in Epping to close asylum hotels. Hundreds of thousands of pupils in England, Wales and Northern Ireland are opening their GCSE results. And Israel says it's laying the groundwork on the outskirts of Gaza City for its planned ground offensive. LBC weather, cloud and sunny spells for most, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. There are queues on the M4 onto the elevated section eastbound from Junction 3 for Hayes to Junction 2 for Brentford. On the A13 in Beckton, an exit slip road is partly blocked because of a broken down vehicle at Beckton Flyover. In Coulston North, there are delays on the A23 Brighton Road in both directions between Smitham Downs Road and Purley. In New Cross, Hatcham Park Road is closed eastbound due to a building fire from the A2 New Cross Road to Camplin Street. A lane is closed on the A13 in Chafford 100 westbound from North Stifford to Lakeside Turnoff. That's because of a broken down vehicle. And services are at a stand on Great Western Railway between Gatwick Airport and Redhill. That's due to track safety checks.
This is LBC.
Tesco Finest Cod. A different kettle of fish. Pan-fried with garlic, slowly baked in butter, or finished with a squeeze of lemon. It'll get you hooked either way. It's why only the finest cuts of wild caught cod are selected for our delicate and flaky cod loins. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Train to Pevensey Bay. Beach, mates, cooler. Oh,
Danny, you got the hummus, yeah?
Of course.
Now this is what it's all about. Time to relax.
Huh? Frisbee? No, you two crack on.
Just made the train. Now home to over half the beach from my bag. 10 out of 10 day, though.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
When they're away at uni and the show you all love is on telly. When you're miles apart but still laughing at the same joke. When the emojis come thick and fast.
Ah, triple smiley face and a heart.
I knew they'd love that.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. Make sure your child has a TV license when they go to uni, so they're covered to watch all TV channels and you can still enjoy all those TV moments in the family group chat.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
Pump 6 in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Am I on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Text 84850.
We'll speak to the school's minister on GCSE results day in just a few moments' time. Tim's in Worthing first. You want to pick up on that change of the conditions for Axel Rudabakana in prison, Tim? Hi.
Indeed. Thanks, Tom, for giving me the time. But I'd just like to make a suggestion. Number one is, when you kill little girls or you kill anybody, then for me, you lose your human rights. Now, we don't have the death penalty in this country, unfortunately, because these are one of the cases that if you're going to commit a crime like that, you're super sick, you're no use to society at all, and you need to pay for your crimes. That's the first thing. And also, I think when you're going to be in this country, we believe in rehabilitation, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you're not showing any signs of rehabilitation if you are literally trying to attack other people.
No,
and I completely agree with your statement as well, was that, you know, it doesn't matter that the water didn't hit the guy or whatever. Your intention was to seriously, seriously hurt somebody. So, yeah, you know, it's a waste. Tom, do you mind if I cover one other point, please? I've tried to get through before.
Go for it.
It's just slightly different. The thing with, there's the thing with all the legal immigration in the country, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to make one quick point, if you indulge me. And I'll have a bit of solution, rightly or wrongly. When you've got all these thousands of people coming over, of which are, it looks like that they're, if I'm right, between 18 and 30, roughly. Mm-hmm. So young men of fighting age, and we are struggling, where do we put them, this and the other? I have a suggestion. What we do is, right now, our country is in a situation where we've got very low armed forces, we're very short. What you do is, these people are looking for asylum, a safe haven. Come to our country, we will put you in our army like we used to have with national service, etc. You will serve us for a couple of years, we'll deploy you, we'll do whatever, but we'll bolster our army, and all the money that we're spending on these hotels and crazy stuff, etc., etc., we will use to train these people up. Now, I know there are some people saying, but we don't know what their agenda is. However, they stay at service for 2 years, or whatever it may be. You then earn the right to stay in our country.
And if they don't, if they say no, if they can't speak English well enough to be able to do that?
Well, but then if they're going to go and train for 2 years, we'd make that part of what we do. But if they refuse, then it's an obvious one, isn't it? It's a bit like...
Well, what's the obvious one? You send them back?
Well, of course. Let me use
Tim, again, I'm sorry, but that is the problem. The sending them back is really not easy. Even if you chucked a grenade in the room and left the ECHR, Reform want to do it, Tories are flirting with it, you still don't have an agreement in place with the country that you're going to deport them to send them back to it. So I don't know how much room it gives you to be able to actually do what you want to do, which is take people back to the country that they came from. Even leaving the ECHR doesn't guarantee that. Tim, thank you. Martin's in Aldershot. Martin.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thoughts?
Good. My jaw hit the floor when I heard was Mr. Khan speaking earlier on.
I'm sure your jaw hit before, but it sounded like your phone signal did too, Martin. We'll see if we can get you on a better line. 8:53 the time. Let's turn to GCSE results. Pupils in England, Wales and Northern Ireland receiving them and their Level 2 vocation and technical qualifications too. They're getting the results to help them to progress to sixth form, college or training. You may remember the day well yourself. I'm sure Catherine McKinnell, Minister for School Standards and MP for Newcastle upon Tyne North, also remembers her GCSE results day. Thank you for coming on the programme, Minister. How did you do?
So I got a mixture of A's and B's from memory, but it was some time ago. I'm giving away my age, but I know how exciting a day this is for young people. I'm sure there are a lot of nerves as well as they wait for their results. But actually, I think we have seen a real steadying of the ship in terms of results and outcomes, which is really welcome, I think, for us as a nation, that we have managed to rebuild from what has been quite a challenging period for education in terms of the pandemic and the impacts subsequent to that. So I think it is a real day of celebration, and young people can rightly be very proud of their resilience and the schools and their families as well that have supported them. This is the generation, cohort, that were locked down just as they were passing from their primary to their secondary stage of education. So I think we shouldn't underestimate the achievement that they are demonstrating today. But I think as well, it always casts a light on some of the entrenched inequalities we still see persisting in our education system. And that's, as a government, we are absolutely determined to tackle those as well.
Well, one of those, as you point out, your boss, the education secretary, is saying that she's concerned that white working class children are being written off, that they are being failed by what exactly? By the school system?
So this is a real persistent challenge that we see, where some, in some aspects regionally, in some aspects manifesting through children with special educational needs and disabilities, but also particular cohorts, white working class children, that are persistently not getting their maths and English, which is really fundamental to go on to, as you have said in your opening comments, onto all the exciting opportunities that are available.
But why is that? Why is the education secretary saying that they're being why is the education secretary saying they're being let down by the school system?
They're not getting the outcomes out of the system that they need to then move on to the next stage, which is why we're absolutely focused on changing that from the very early years, making sure that we're investing in Best Start Family Hubs, in really quality early years provision, but also right through breakfast clubs, making sure that children from all backgrounds get that really good start to the school day.
Is that not an extraordinary indictment on teachers? They are failing white working class children.
I think it's a really fundamental systemic challenge that we see throughout the system. As I say, we're investing in free school meals for more children on universal credit. We recognise the challenges that many families are facing, but also we want to support schools to really drive improvement. So, for example, we brought in the school improvement teams that are really working hard with schools where they're not getting the outcome for these children that we're concerned about, and making sure that we drive those improvements through some really specific actions, some relating to attendance. We know we've seen 5 million more schools days attended by children, which is real green shoot.
If the school system is the thing that's letting down these working class children, what are they doing in school that makes it better for them in terms of outcomes? What is the school now doing that they weren't doing before that is set to help their chances?
Well, on attendance, there are really specific actions schools can take. We've got much better data now of where children are, what they're doing, who's not attending, in order to be able to really drive those attendance rates. Because we know that if children aren't in school, they can't get the brilliant education that we want them to get.
You're saying that the school system is letting them down.
We also know that by ensuring more children have access to a free school meal, it will help to drive attendance. We're also looking at attainment and making sure we have brilliant teachers in school. We've got 2,300 more teachers in school than we had this time last year. We're working on recruitment and retention of teachers because that's the number one factor that can really boost outcomes for children. Really high quality teachers in the classroom supporting children in their schoolwork. So
the way in which you're going to stop the systemic failure of schools of British white working class kids is universal free school meals, or free school meals, more meals at breakfast time, breakfast clubs, and better standard of teacher.
Well, they're just two measures, but also working on attendance, working on attainment, supporting children in very targeted ways to improve their outcomes at school. And it does start in the early years because we recognise these are really entrenched inequalities.
Yeah.
These go back, years that have not been addressed. So there have been improvements across our school system that have driven strong outcomes for many yes. children, and they will be celebrating today, and rightly so, and very proud. But for those that are still not getting those outcomes, that are giving them that stepping stone to what comes next, that's where we are really focused as well, making sure that we have a school system that delivers for them. And that yes. does mean having more teachers in the classroom, having more children attending school, having a curriculum that is enriching, but also covers the basics and the fundamentals in a really strong way, supporting reading at school, bringing in, making sure we have the teaching workforce that can deliver yes. that for all children, and you know, really boosting maths and English.
Well, let's see how we get on next year. Next year's GCSEs, maybe they will be better than this one. While I have you on the line, can I ask you about what the Mail is reporting is the release now today of Lucy Connolly, who was sent to prison for 31 months for hate speech during the Southport riots. She sent a tweet which she deleted 3.5 hours afterwards. The Telegraph reports that in 2013, the Prime Minister, then Director of Public Prosecutions, said that it may well be the case that people who put up tweets that go up on a Friday and Saturday night and come down the next morning really don't need criminal prosecution. That is a relevant factor. Why did the Prime Minister say that?
So sentencing is a matter for the independent courts. And, you know, we absolutely as a government support the work that the police have to take to keep our streets safe. And all cases have to be considered on their own facts and on the merits of the case.
You have the Director of Public Prosecutions there saying, actually, do you know what, if the tweet goes up Friday and Saturday night and comes down the next morning, he says, now, if that is the case, a lot of people will say that shouldn't have happened, the person has accepted it, but really you don't need a criminal prosecution, it is a relevant factor. So I wonder if the Prime Minister, if the government, if you yourself wonder that 31 months for that tweet that was deleted within 3.5 hours was too long.
So my understanding is that in this case, the CPS was satisfied that the incitement provisions in the Public Order Act were relevant and should be used. And that was the decision that was taken. As I said, though, it is a matter for the independent courts. And we absolutely support the courts and their independence and the police and their very difficult job of keeping us safe.
Thank you very much indeed for coming on. Catherine McKinnell is Minister for School Standards and MP for Newcastle upon Tyne North. You're listening to Tom Swarbrick and for Nick Ferrara at Breakfast on LBC. Coming up,
this feels like two-tier justice. And when you compare it to other sentences, indeed for violent crimes, the fact that she's going to remain behind bars for this tweet just seems quite extraordinary.
She's become a kind of core celeb for free speech activists on the political right. Today it is being reported that Lucy Connolly is going to walk free from prison in a matter of hours after being jailed for writing a racist tweet during last summer's riots. This in contrast to what the Telegraph reports that the then Director of Public Prosecutions, a man called Keir Starmer, said about those who might put up a tweet for a few hours and then delete it, whether or not that should actually need some criminal prosecution. Do you think a 31-month sentence for Lucy Connolly was just too long?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC,
leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has told more Tory-run councils to fight for the closure of asylum hotels. Her letter says they should take the same steps as in Epping in Essex, where the authority has secured a High Court injunction. At least two Labour-run councils are also considering legal action to stop hotels being used to house migrants. Paul Mason is a Tory councillor in Broxbourne in Hertfordshire.
It's not for us to have to deal with it locally. We're a local council. We're elected by local people to run local services. It's not our problem that the Home Office dump a whole load, hundreds of people in our borough with all sorts of issues that we have to pick up. We don't get adequate funding for any of this.
Labour has dismissed Kemi Badenoch's letter as a desperate and hypocritical nonsense. Pupils across England, Wales and Northern Ireland are opening their GCSE results this morning. Last year's A-level grades showed a growing attainment divide between London and the northeast of England. The school's standards minister, Catherine McKinnell, has been speaking to Tom. She says action's being taken to ensure working class children aren't left behind.
We brought in the school improvement teams that are really working hard with schools where they're not getting the outcome for these children that we're concerned about, and making sure that we drive those improvements through some really specific actions, some relating to attendance. We know we've seen 5 million more schools days attended.
The Israeli military says its troops are now holding the outskirts of Gaza City. Officials say they've begun the preliminary operations and first stages of the ground assault on the area. An estimated 60,000 reservists are expected to report for duty next month. Two people are being questioned after an ice cream man was stabbed to death in northwest London. Shahzad Khan, who was 41, died following reports of an altercation in Wembley just after 6 o'clock on Tuesday evening. A 26-year-old man and a 31-year-old woman are being held by police. Government borrowing slowed to a lower than expected £1.1 billion in July. It's the lowest such figure for 3 years, providing some relief for the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, in the run-up to the budget. It follows an increase in tax and national insurance receipts. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 92.96. That's up 7. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, a mixture of cloud and sunny spells, some light showers in the north and east, a high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Let's stop there. Being a soldier, it's exciting. You already know that. What you want to know is, what's in it for me? I wanted to learn leadership skills from the experts.
I wanted to get paid to earn qualifications.
I wanted more confidence and outlook. I'm on the radio.
That's what was in it for me.
Get skills, get qualified, get confident. Army. Recruiting now. Search Army Jobs.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you, 9:05 the time. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Hope we find you very well this Thursday morning. Coming up, she's back at your pension. Rachel Reeves considers cutting the tax-free pension lump sum in a move expected to raise more than £2 billion a year. It means that you might only be allowed some £40,000 taken out from your pension pot before you start being taxed on it, up to 25%. Do you think that's a very good way, a helpful way? We're trying to get more money into the government coffers. Plus, we'll talk about another fatal knife attack, this time in Wembley. An ice cream man stabbed in broad daylight. A shocked residents watch on. We'll bring you the details.
Call 0345 6060 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Very good morning to you. First this hour, what you did encouraged activity which threatened or endangered life and therefore falls within Category 1. Lucy Connolly, a wife and mum, jailed for inciting racial hatred, handed a 31-month sentence in October after pleading guilty following tweets she put out during the riots that spread around the country in the wake of the Southport attacks in July last year. She has become a sort of pin-up, a kind of core celeb for those who would champion freedom of speech, for those who accuse the government of having a two-tier justice system. The post which she put on X, which she later deleted some 3.5 hours later, said this: mass deportation now. Set fire to all the effing hotels full of the, for all I care. If that makes me racist, so be it. She has been serving time at in Peterborough Prison, had an application to have her sentence rejected in May. The Daily Mail, though, is reporting this morning that Lucy Connolly is due to be released today. Her imprisonment prompted allegations that she was a victim of two-tier justice, with claims that those with, quotes, right-wing views are treated more harshly than others in the UK. She put that post on Twitter just hours after the killer Axel Rudabekana murdered three young girls. She was arrested on August the 6th, by which point she had deleted her social media account. But other messages, which included other damning remarks, uncovered by officers who seized her phone. Her tweet was viewed 310,000 times in 3.5 hours before she deleted it. She later pleaded guilty to distributing material with the intention of stirring up racial hatred at Birmingham Crown Court and sentenced to that 31-month period. Do you welcome her release? That she's out of prison now? Or in theory coming out today? That she was in there for too long? That it is a bit of hypocrisy to have a quote from Keir Starmer as Director of Public Prosecutions, as is in the Daily Telegraph today from 2013, saying, well, you put a tweet up on a Friday and Saturday, you delete it after a few hours. Might there be a need to put you in prison? Well, sometimes no. Is that hypocritical? Sophie Corcoran is a political commentator who started a petition calling for Lucy Connolly to be freed. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. And presumably this is a day on which you are celebrating somewhat.
I probably wouldn't say celebrating, but I'm happy that she is finally being released. I don't think that she should ever really have gone to prison in the first place. I don't think it was going to serve the public in any way doing that. I don't think it has served her or her family in any way doing that. And I think, you know, lots of people have the views of the justice system. I'm surprised that people on the left of the political spectrum, I know they were probably happy that because she was right wing she went to prison, but if you've always had the view that the justice system, you know, should be used in a way to benefit society and benefit individuals, I don't think that putting a woman who came into this case with a lot of trauma and, you know, had a perfect non-violent record before this, had been a very helpful member of society before this, made one tweet, deleted it in a few hours, and has then had this happen. So frustrated that we ever had to have this conversation, relieved for her.
Why did she plead guilty?
Well, I think actually, to be fair, this is a question that we need to ask because I don't know if we're allowed to talk about this, but obviously the Ricky Jones case came out and he went to trial and he very much, you know, incited violence on video, saying that about people having their throats slit. But he was found not guilty because he went to for a jury with his peers and was found not guilty for that. So I feel like
this is the Labour councillor. Just to be really clear, this is Ricky Jones, Labour councillor, on trial at Snaresborough Crown Court, seen on video making reference to, quotes, disgusting Nazi fascists. He directed his marks towards those activists and told and produced a sign across his throat, I think, drew fingers across his throat as he spoke to the crowd, found not guilty for encouraging violent disorder.
But I feel like if Lucy Connolly hadn't been, there was obviously lots of accusations that she was pressured into taking to pleading guilty, as to be fair, as were a lot of the people involved in the Southport, because they were led to believe that it would, you know, give them a shorter sentence or whatever. Had she perhaps have pleaded not guilty and gone to a trial of her peers, would the same outcome would have happened? You know, why were things being dealt differently? And I think that people are understandably right to say that they believe this is two-tier justice. I mean, when you have a Labour councillor getting away with that and someone that
they're
was
different cases, Sophie. The problem is they're different cases.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to get at. They were different processes. But we should question the process of
cases.
Why was
this they're different facts. They're different circumstances.
I mean, to be fair, it's not, you know, beyond the realm of why people are questioning the two, though. I mean, surely you have to understand.
Well, you can put two things. You can put two outcomes in court next to each other and say, why are these different? And part of the reason why they're different is they've got different things happening in them. There are different facts, different circumstances that
well,
come
course,
to a different conclusion.
The exact same case, but you can understand why members of the public, you know, ordinary men and women in Britain are saying, hang on, this doesn't look right. This doesn't look fair. But that is a case of the process as well. And we have to ask, why was Lucy Connolly, you know, allegedly pressured into doing this?
Sophie Corcoran, political commentator, started a petition calling for Lucy Connolly to be freed. Thank you for your time. 12 past nine, Liam Cottry is director of Mary Monson Solicitors in London. Thanks for coming on, Liam. 31 months, pleading guilty, deleted it after 3.5 hours. Fair? Oh, it's such a tough question. I'm not even sure you... Have I stunned him into silence? Stunned into silence by the probing nature of the question. Let's see if we can get Liam Cottry back on. I was just asking Liam whether or not you felt that the circumstances around Lucy Connolly meant that a 31-month prison sentence was fair.
I don't actually, Tom. I think at the time, tempers, atmosphere was high and thick. I think certain sentences need to be passed, which was somewhat out of the ordinary. The fabric of society was falling apart throughout the country, not just in Southport and surrounding areas, but throughout the country. Examples had to be made. Cases were fast-tracked to sentence in the Crown Court. People were being sentences that probably wouldn't usually have been given, and some of them, frankly, had to be done to set that example, to stop the chaos that was going on. Lucy Corcoran, however, get mixed up with your previous
Connolly,
caller, yeah. Connolly. The sentence she was given, I felt, was severe. You've given a very full outline of what she was accused of, what she pleaded guilty to, very importantly. No evidence of pressure, from what I understand, no evidence of pressure from anyone else who pleaded guilty during that time. And there was more than just that single tweet. There was a lot of background, other tweets as well, mm-hmm. inciting racial hatred and her reason for doing so through text messages, which were served by the Crown on the court and were there for everyone to see. There were text messages about how she was going to play the court, play the mental health card and so on. Showing the thinking behind what she was doing. But regardless, she pleaded guilty. This was someone quite rightly said, without previous convictions, very important part of mitigation, pleaded guilty, 31 months imprisonment. It did feel harsh at the time, despite the atmosphere that was going on. It feels harsh now. The principal tweet, when she talked about doing whatever to hotels for all I care, seems like she doesn't care what happened.
Well, yeah.
I think it was mainly because of that tweet that they looked at others. But that tweet on its own, it made me feel a little bit uneasy. I'm a defence lawyer. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at ways to make sure that people are guilty of things rather than pleading guilty to something that they've not done. But I think that just led to a web of material that the police found and felt she had to be charged. And she pleaded guilty, of course.
Do you think, Liam, that if a similar set of circumstances, a similar tweet happens now about
yes.
asylum hotels, someone puts it up there for 3.5 hours, that they would get a similar length sentence? Or is she
so.
A victim
I don't
of...
I think so.
She's a victim of the sort of, in a sense, the circumstances in which she tweeted it because the country was struggling.
Well, I'm reluctant to use the word victim because, of course, she's not a victim,
yep,
but principally, but beyond that, she should have known what she was doing within the circumstances of the time. And that is how people are sentenced. And somewhat rightly so. I think we need to look at the broader picture in the times that we were in. But those times, we're talking about a 4-week period. I'm talking more months, years and so on. Perhaps she was. I'm reluctant to use the word victim, but perhaps she wasn't under those circumstances. I don't think the same thing would happen now.
Liam, thank you very much indeed. Liam Cottry is director of Mary Monson Solicitors in London. We're talking about this morning because the Mail is reporting that Lucy Connolly is to be released today, walking free from prison in just a matter of hours, the paper says, after being jailed for that tweet and subsequent others over the course of last summer's riots. Was the sentence too harsh? Would it happen again today? Get your calls in just a few moments. Plus,
I think we're living in lawless London. And I think one of the reasons people are fleeing our city It's not just tax, it's fear of crime.
An ice cream man is fatally stabbed in North London as onlookers watch on. There have been a number of arrests in connection with that event. We'll bring you the details of it. Shocking event. We'll bring you the details in just a few moments' time. 9:16 news headlines now. Thomas Watts.
Tory-run councils have been told to take the same steps as in Epping to close asylum hotels. Hundreds of thousands of pupils in England, Wales and Northern Ireland are opening their GCSE results. And Israel says it's laying the groundwork on the outskirts of Gaza City for its planned ground offensive. LBC weather, cloud and sunny spells for most, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. In New Cross, Hatcham Park Road is closed eastbound due to a building fire from the A2 New Cross Road to Camplin Street. In Greenwich, the A206 Trafalgar Road is partially blocked both ways near Blackwall Lane. That's due to a lorry parked in the road. Things are slow and whopping on the A1203, the highway westbound before Tower Bridge, coming from Limehouse Link Tunnel. There are queues in East Sheen on the A205 Upper Richmond Road in both directions at Sheen Lane. In Causton North, there are delays on the A20 Brighton Road in both directions between Smitham Downs Road and Purley. And services are at a stand on Great Western Railway between Gatwick Airport and Redhill. That's due to track safety checks.
LBC.
Save with EETV and get the ultimate flex.
Is anyone up for Squid Game on Netflix?
What about The Rookie on Now?
Wait, I need to catch up.
No spoilers here. With EETV, you can switch up your subscription so you never miss unmissable shows.
So I can watch whatever I want.
That's right. Switch on Netflix now and Discovery Plus to suit you. All on our ultra-reliable broadband. That's why TV lovers are choosing EE. Search EETV deals today.
New customers, 56% UK availability. Terms of
This is LBC.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus duty only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
Renault. An electric car grant is good. But an electric car grant on an award-winning Renault, where we do all the paperwork for you. Incroyable. Renault range now available with the electric car grant and 0% APR representative. Search Renault electric car grant. Order by 30th of September 2025. Exclude Channel Islands, PCP mobilized financial services, minimum deposit required, 18 plus, T's and C's apply.
Ah, train to Worthing for scuba training. Yep. We're that family now.
Josh, flip us off until you're in the water, mate.
Well, I look ridiculous, but they're loving it.
Muddy, goggles the other way around, sweetie.
Ah, oh, seats found, kids happy. Heading home. Definitely bringing these wetsuits to our next beach day.
Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
20 past nine, mum Lucy Connolly out of prison, the Daily Mail suggests later on today, after being sentenced to 31 months for pleading guilty to a charge of inciting racial hatred after a post on X that was up for 3.5 hours. Calling for hotels to be set on fire, mass deportations, was put onto the social media site and then deleted. She pleaded guilty. But if she did the same thing today, would she get a similarly harsh, tough, long sentence? Forget the harsh and tough bit. Would she get a similarly lengthy sentence if she did the same tweet today? Or is context key? Richard's in Manchester. Richard.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm really worried about what I'm seeing happening in this country. I'm seeing almost like two parallel universes. Firstly, with regard to the question, would it happen again today of her going into prison if she put a tweet on and took it off pretty much within an hour or so? The answer is categorically no, she absolutely wouldn't. But what I'm seeing is, and we have to grasp the nettle here, is we have to accept that there are significant demographic demographic influences changing the social structure of our society that are impacting decisions which are not necessarily being made for the benefit of everyone, but are being made because they secure people's position in Parliament and they recognise these significant demographic changes. And it is no different, for example, to being told you can't fly, you can't hang the St. George's flag, because that's not acceptable, but you can hang the Palestinian flag. And it's a sensitive subject, but let's grasp the nettle. These demographic changes are relentless, and unless somebody addresses the truth and grasps that nettle, then okay, we're not going to see any changes.
Well, Richard,
changes.
At the moment I'm attempting to grasp an entire thicket of nettles. Give me an example of what you're talking about. The England-Palestine flag thing that you reference is not people saying you can't fly the England flag because it is unacceptable. They're saying that you can't attach it to council property on a lamppost, otherwise we'll have to get rid of it.
Can we attach the a Palestinian or any other flag that the council deems to be appropriate?
No,
the council,
they took those flags down too. In Tower Hamlets, they took the Palestine flag off lampposts too. It took them a couple of weeks, but they took it down.
Where were they hanging from?
From lampposts. Some of them from on the council property, they took them down.
So it took them 2 weeks to resolve that issue, but this lady had 3.5 hours and she was sent to prison.
Well, hang on, they're two entirely different issues.
No, if you recognise the sub-narrative of what I'm saying...
Well, why don't you make it really... Let's clear the bushes out of the way, Richard. Be really direct with Britain this morning. What is it that you're saying?
I'm saying that there are social structural changes taking place in the United Kingdom and in Europe, where the increasing influence of the Muslim vote is having potentially, not potentially, we're beginning to see nefarious influences on our democracy.
Give me an example.
Well, give you an example. I think there were two examples just there. What is... Look, I'll give you an example.
No, give me an actual concrete example of what you're trying to tell me.
Okay. When my MP stands up and says, right, I want to talk to you constituents, and I want to talk to you about the new school that we should be building here, yep, the new roads that we should be building here, yep, the new hospital that we should be building there, all the things which relate to me as a constituent,
yes,
that's one thing. And when you have other MPs saying, perhaps in Rochdale and elsewhere, they don't even address those issues. They say, this is a vote for Palestine. Mm-hmm. That is when it becomes an issue. That is when it becomes no longer... That is when it becomes a problem.
And the problem is that people want to vote on a single issue, the issue being something that isn't happening in this country.
No, not that. The issue is a pandering to the demographic changes within the constituencies, which will only increase. And that's the nettle that people all are thinking about, but people are all too frightened in case they're called a racist. And they're not a racist.
How does this relate to Lucy Connolly?
Because they were pandering to the Muslim vote, because they wanted to be seen to be whiter than white. Forgive that example, that's a wrong description, but if you understand the point I'm trying to make, they're trying to be seen to be absolutely doing the right thing, and in trying to do the right thing, they did absolutely the wrong thing.
Well, what about the lots of people who are queuing up to tell me that that sentence was the right sentence, that what she said was completely unacceptable, which is why she took it down and also pleaded guilty?
If you sentence people to prison for all the horrendous things that we see on social media today, you'd need to build 1,000 more prisons. This case was used as...
Does that mean that someone's allowed to get away with it?
I beg your pardon?
Does that mean that someone should be allowed to get away with it?
No, because you should have consistency.
Right, so here's a woman who has sent a tweet that incites racial hatred. We know that because she pleaded guilty to it. She was sentenced to 31 months in prison. And you say this is a decision that panders to the Muslim vote because politicians who didn't actually enact the sentence, that's the courts, need to be seen to be on their side?
I tell you what word springs to mind. It's called disproportionate.
Right. That may well be the case. You're allowed to have that. Certainly, you can come to that opinion if you like, Richard. But I don't see what that's got to do with Muslims, really, or pandering.
I think it really reflects the fact that you would not have taken that disproportionality with any other ethnic group being so powerful within the electorate. I think that is what influenced people. And that is what has influenced Keir Starmer in so many other ways, knowing that there are things happening in politics, there are new parties being formed, you have to be seen to do certain things, and, you know, it's reality. It's not nice, it's not pleasant, but it is reality.
Well, what is reality is that there are demographic shifts happening in this country when it comes to age, when it comes to increasing the rate of the population in this country. We have had immigration on a scale we have not seen in our nation's history in the last few years, and that is going to have an impact. No doubt that will have an impact. Financially, culturally, that will have... Of course it will impact. But I think we need to stick to actual facts rather than the guesswork that might be going on that leads to the conclusion that I think maybe you've come to, Richard. But I appreciate your call. Thank you. Paul's in Waltham Forest. Paul.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Yeah, good, sir. Thoughts?
Yeah, so I think that I don't believe that there is such a big difference between the two cases of Lucy Connolly and the Labour MP. I don't quite understand how there can be such a huge discussion about the cases being different.
Well, it's not a discussion. They are different. One of them is a tweet that got seen by 300,000 people. One is a draw of the fingers across the neck, intimated towards a different group of people. They're two different things.
Yeah, and I think that's where the problem is. I think that's where a lot of people are feeling frustrated, because a lot of people are just looking at the what's glaring them in the face. That one is a tweet, and, you know, she goes to prison, and the other one doesn't go to prison.
Would you like that man to have gone to prison for what he did?
No, because...
Right.
Well, okay, there is a good outcome
in that sense. You're allowed to draw your fingers across your neck in a threatening manner to somebody without going to prison.
No, I think the opposite. I don't think Lucy should have gone to prison.
No, I'm talking about this man. I'm talking about Ricky Jones, this guy that you've referred to in this case.
So based on the fact that Lucy Connolly went to prison, then yes, the Labour councillor should have gone.
So you're happy with... people who make that signal, draw their fingers across their throat in an intimidating manner, you think they should go to prison?
Not necessarily in this particular case. What I'm trying to say is I just think that there should be consistency across the justice system. Because if you're going to send somebody to prison for a tweet, and let's be honest, there's a lot of people that say things online in the heat of a moment that wouldn't necessarily say it in person. It's almost as if they have a different character online. You know, they're called keyboard warriors, right? It's like they have a different persona online. They say things that they wouldn't necessarily say in person. But for this Labour councillor to actually draw his fingers across his neck in front of people, you can see his body language.
Yeah, and he said, I'm reading here, Labour councillor called for far-right activists' throats to be cut at an anti-racism rally has been found not guilty of encouraging violent disorder. So he pulled the action and he said those words. Now, the problem is that those who are on the side of Lucy Connolly not receiving any jail time say we should be allowed to say these things even if they are offensive. She wasn't really inciting violence. She's just saying something that is offensive. If you apply the same logic, the same attitude, what Ricky Jones did should also result in no prison sentence, because he said something that was horrible and not very nice, but, you know, nothing happened. No one's throat did get cut, so fine.
Well, yeah, but again, with Ricky Jones, I think it's worse what he did. And I think a lot of people see that as being a more exaggerated call to violence. Somebody sitting behind a keyboard writing words is not going to be as bad as somebody on camera when you can hear them, you can see their hatred in there, you can see their body language.
Well, I guess it depends on who it is, how big their audience is, the circumstances of it. But, Paul, listen, I think... difficult, isn't it? He called for people's throats to be cut and drew a line across his neck at a rally, which was then filmed and distributed on social media and went viral. So it was still out there. Tricky. Paul, thank you very much indeed. Eric, I'll come to your call in just a few moments. Coming up...
Police are questioning a man and a woman after an ice cream seller was stabbed to death in North London. I'm LBC's Fraser Knight with all the details.
9.31, news headlines, Thomas Watts.
The exams regulator says this year's GCSE results are stable in comparison to the last two set of marks. The proportion of entries awarded the top grades, at least a 7, is up very slightly to 21.9%. Conservative council leaders are being encouraged to mount legal challenges over asylum hotels. The Tory leader, Kemi Badenoch, says they should take the same steps as the local authority in Epping. A woman who was jailed for inciting racial hatred in the aftermath of the Southport attack is reportedly set to be released. Lucy Connolly's 31-month prison term has been criticised by some as too harsh, but was defended by the Prime Minister earlier this year. LBC weather, a mixture of cloud and sunny spells, some isolated light showers in the north and east, a high of 21 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
You just get it right, the customer service, the sort of communication. You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero-emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Many dentists refer their own patients on to Darwood and Tanner.
My name is Dr. Mark Kent. I'm a general dental practitioner practicing in a North London suburb. Darwood and Tanner have become my preferred referral practice. I feel that Dr. Andrew Darwood can provide the highest level of implant surgery that is available, together with giving my patients the option of alternative specialist treatments.
Download your information pack today. Search Darwood and Tanner. Your smile is our healthy obsession. Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Text 84850.
9.34, of all the offensive things you've said about me over the few years that I've been here, Daz in Brighton, this is unacceptable. Tom, I know you are a pensioner basher. Daz, I'm not. I don't know how this has possibly come up. I'm not a pensioner basher. Although those of you who follow me on Instagram, at tswarbrick1, will know that I was effectively chased off the bus by a group of them the other day. Daz says, Tom, even you must appreciate that all the tinkering with pension tax relief, lifetime allowances and rolling balances into inheritance tax is making planning for the future impossible. Is it Labour policy to impoverish and punish everyone in work in order to pay those who sit at home on benefits? Apart from Starmer, who has his gold-plated DPP pension ring-fenced by his own legislation and his core voting pool, brackets the unions, asks Daz. Well, there's another change that might be coming to your pension pot in the not-too-distant future. I'll bring it to you in a few moments. Louise, I'll get to your call too. First... my bad. The idea of having a lawless London, as exposed by Nigel Farage, has been given extra credence today, it would seem, as an ice cream seller who was fatally stabbed in northwest London has been named as Shazad Khan. The Met Police was called to Wembley at about 6:10 on Tuesday evening, where the 41-year-old was treated for stab wounds but died at the scene. Fraser Knight is LBC's reporter with the details. Fraser.
Well, Tom, 41-year-old Shazad Khan has been described as a famous ice cream guy in Wembley. One of his childhood friends describing his ice cream van as being very well known locally for having a big teddy bear in it. But on Tuesday night at 6:10, police were called to Monk's Park, where he was found with stab wounds. Now, police say that they arrested one person at the scene, a 31-year-old woman, on conspiracy to murder. And then yesterday, Thursday morning, a 26-year-old man then arrested on suspicion of murder. There's been a lot of talk about Shahzad Khan from witnesses, from people who live in the area. They've described him as being married, having a young daughter, a community guy who used to play cricket and football. And then about a year ago, he started selling ice cream. Now, it's reported that the ice cream van was parked on the road when this incident happened. And one witness said that police took that away, towed it away in the early hours of yesterday morning. A statement from police say, "Our thoughts remain with Shahzad's family and friends. This incident will rightly cause concern across the community, but they say intelligence leads us to believe there is no wider threat to the public." Those two people, a 31-year-old woman and a 26-year-old man, still in police custody, being questioned after the death of the famous ice cream man Shahzad Khan.
Fraser, thank you. Fraser Knight, LBC's reporter with those details of what happened in North West London on Tuesday night. Louise is in Luton. You want to talk, pick up on the sort of flags element of this as produced by Richard in Manchester a bit earlier, Louise. Hi.
Hi, good morning, Tom. Yes, you're right. So going back to that point that he said around the flags, and I think you mentioned that if they're attached to council property, then they need to be removed. Mm-hmm. Now, I believe that that's the theory and that's the story in which that they're telling the country. However, I live in Luton and I could probably now go and take quite easily 25 photos of flags, of marketing material, of posters, campaigns attached to council property, and then take that photo a month's time, 2 months' time, 3 months' time, and it'd still be there. Because some of the advertising that is attached to council property has been there for a year. So we see it very frequently.
What does it advertise, Louise? What's it advertising?
So you've got your Palestinian flags. You've got a lot of hatred around the government and what they need to be doing. We have
about Israel or just generally?
Generally, Israel, obviously, the Palestinian war, we've got a lot of stuff around that. We have constant campaigns that are being on the streets. And then if we was to look at one of the things I think he previously mentioned as well around Muslim and around Islam and the way in which that's been sort of pushed upon people within the UK. So if we were to look at when...
What do you mean?
I would say that there has been... There is a political way in which we handle race, we handle religion, we handle cultures. And I think this is, it's not necessarily about what they preach, but it's the way in which we politically avoid it, or we will put it on there for fear of the government wanting not to be looking to be fair. It's the political correctness around it. But for other people, so for instance, when we have Eid and we have multiple festivals, of uh-huh. we have marketing down every single on council property around every single flagpole lamppost that goes on our dual carriageway. We have something called Hatter's Way, and that will have Allah is basically the only God. Mm-hmm. Support Allah, Allah is peace, and sign up here. Now, if we was to do that, I'm a Catholic. We tried to do something to support Easter about 3 years ago, so not long after the pandemic. We were told that we weren't allowed to advertise on there because of what it would do to.
So there's a squeamishness. In your view, Louise, about applying the rules that apply to you and your religious festival to those who have a different religious festival they want to promote. Is that what we're saying?
I think it's the way in which it's handled. I feel that there is a... I think everybody has the right to have a God of their understanding. You know, we are a Christian country, but I think God of understanding, everyone has that and they're allowed to have that. Yeah. But it's the way in which it's forced upon people, or say it's one rule for one and one for, you know, not for another. So if there was a St. George's cross put up on council property, I can guarantee that will be removed in Luton. Guarantee, because
Removed if it was a Palestine flag or a...
No, that's what I'm saying, they're not.
Yemen flag or something.
They're not removed. And when we look at the internal structure of our Luton Council, the reason it's, we believe, and I say this because this is a bit of a consensus across some people within Luton, that it's because of the people that are in those positions within the Council of Luton.
All right. Louise, appreciate the call. Thank you very much indeed. You're listening to LBC 941, some news breaking from the Home Office. Data released in the last few moments shows a total of 32,000 asylum seekers were being housed temporarily in UK hotels at the end of Labour's first year in government. That is up 8% on the same point 12 months ago. So asylum hotel use is up 8% in 12 months as Labour came into government. I'm sure there'll be more coverage of that statistic throughout the day. Eric's in Liverpool, coming back to Lucy Connolly. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Tom. I think what you have to look at in all these cases, whether it be, you know, right-wing or left, is if somebody tweets or puts something on the internet in any form, whether it be a picture, whatever, movie, what is the desired outcome of that person? For instance, I think somebody should be allowed to go on and maybe say, you know, they think that they don't believe in white privilege, that they think, you know, But if they suggest that somebody bends a cross on some black dude's front lawn and breaks the windows, that has to be dealt with, surely.
Yes, of course.
You know, and I think, you know, what sort of upset me is, I mean, I don't think any sign, whether it be religious or whatever, should be on council property. I think we should be like America, where religion and the state are separate. So, because, you know, you can't have freedom, you can't have freedom of religion without freedom from religion, because, you know, I mean, I always say to my Christian friends, because they're all for religion controlling the state, you know, or some of them are anyway, and I say, well, what if all of a sudden, everyone in the country and the government decided to become Satanist? Would you be happy with that?
Not particularly, no.
Well, no. And so that's a danger, I feel. And I think, you know, if we could separate church from state, and, you know, I've nothing on council buildings at all.
All right. Eric, I like it. Thank you very much indeed. 03456060973 is the number. Many of you have been making comparisons between what happened to Lucy Connolly and the conclusion in the case of the Labour councillor, Ricky Jones, who was found not guilty of inciting racial hatred when he called for far-right activists' throats to be slit at an anti-racism rally in Walthamstow. This is what happened.
We've got children and women using those trains destroying the sovereignty. They are disgusting, nasty fascists. And we need to cull their throats and get rid of them all.
We need to cut all of their throats. Bearing in mind, he said this in August of last year, at a time when people were taking to the streets in protest. There was a lot of talk from the government and the police and authorities about people being far right or extreme right or what have you. There's a Labour councillor calling for the throats of far right activists to be slit. He's found not guilty by a jury of the crime of inciting racial hatred. If Lucy Connolly's she pleaded guilty. I mean, that's the big difference, isn't it? If he'd pleaded guilty, then it'd all be over by the shouting. Lucy Connolly pleaded guilty, so there wasn't an availability for the jury to assess the facts and come to a conclusion. Had they done, I suspect the outcome might have been rather different. Isn't that the case? Isn't that why they're different? Get to your calls in a few moments' time. 9:45, headlines, Thomas Watts.
New figures show a total of 32,000 asylum seekers were being housed in hotels at the end of Labour's first year in government. A woman who was jailed for inciting racial hatred in the aftermath of the Southport attack is reportedly set to be released. And the GCSE pass rate has fallen again in England, Wales and Northern Ireland. LBC weather, a mixture of cloud and sunny spells, some light showers in the north and east, a high of 21 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. In New Cross, the A2 New Cross Road is closed in both directions because of a building fire just off Hatcham Park Road between Queen's Road and Pomeroy Street. In Greenwich, the A206 Trafalgar Road is partially blocked both ways near Blackwall Lane. That's due to a lorry parked in the road. Things are slow in Bowes Park on the A406 North Circular Road westbound around the Clockhouse interchange. The recues in East Sheen on the A205 Upper Richmond Road in both directions at Sheen Lane. In Colston North, there are delays on the A23 Brighton Road in both directions between Smitham Downs Road and Purley. And service is suspended on Great Western Railway between Gatwick Airport and Redhill.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Lewis Goodall.
Tens of thousands of Gazans flee Gaza City as Israel moves in. Will they listen to anyone? Will the war ever stop?
Lewis Goodall on LBC.
Don't miss up to 50% off in Dunelm's Bank Holiday event. With huge savings on thousands of products, from bedding to curtains, furniture, rugs, mattresses, suitcases, paint, wallpaper and more. Save up to 50% at Dunelm, in-store and online now, with free click and collect in as little as 2 hours. Dunelm, the home of homes. T's and C's apply.
LBC.
The holiday park industry is in the spotlight after thousands of holiday park homeowners lost what they...
You've heard it in the news. Holiday park homeowners being hit with sudden site fee increases, fake resale promises and dramatic losses in the value of their holiday homes. The Holiday Park Advice Centre could help you get compensation if you were missold. Contact the Holiday Park Advice Centre today. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Canal Adventures in St Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh, kids, cafe's this way.
Oh, eat your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that? Yes, I have both Captain Nats for the boat ride.
Train back.
So that was two pastries, one boat ride, and no tantrums. Result!
Love this shot of them driving the boat.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge, helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex, as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire your pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's a day ending with Y, so I'm going to talk about pensions in a minute. Mark's in Woking first. Hiya, Mark.
Hello. I am okay to talk about Vicky Jones.
Of course you are.
Yes, two things that strike me that haven't been mentioned. First of all, as a councillor, he, in a calm tone, got up and addressed that crowd, knowing in advance what he was going to say and do, whereas the lady acted in the heat of the moment.
Right.
Acceptable?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I genuinely don't know whether he, on the cuff, spur of the moment, came out with the words about slitting the throats of far-right activists.
Right. Second point.
Do you know whether he planned that, or...?
I don't, but...
Right,
OK, thought,
so we don't know.
As an elected councillor, you would expect a higher quality.
Well, you certainly wouldn't expect an elected official to talk about slitting people's throats, no.
Right. Second thing, I believe he's on the left politically, in which case he is almost certainly against the death penalty. I just wonder how it is someone who's against the death penalty can start calling on the lynch mob when it suits him. I think that just shows the hatred in him.
Well, that's as maybe. I mean, the fact is he was found not guilty of encouraging violent disorder.
I didn't think it went to court, so he wasn't found not guilty.
He did go to court. He was found not guilty by a jury.
That's strange. In that case, I think maybe we do have two-tier justice. It
Why?
Seems strange that... Because I would have thought, considering his position, considering the calmness with which he must have spoken, and considering that he was calling for death of people, I just don't see how you can have two different outcomes. Is it because he's black?
No, it's not because
good,
he's
good.
Black. He pleaded not guilty. She pleaded guilty. If she pleaded not guilty, maybe a jury comes to the same conclusion that it came to with Ricky Jones, that no, she didn't incite racial hatred. But she pleaded guilty.
I would agree
to
with
it.
that. I, I should imagine some people think it's smarter to plead guilty to get a shorter sentence. How long do you think she would have got if she had not done that?
If she'd not pleaded guilty?
Yes.
I don't know whether she'd been found guilty because she'd gone to a jury. I don't know. But normally you get mitigation if you plead guilty to something that is useful to you if you know that you've done it in getting time off your sentence. Clearly for Lucy Connolly's case, that didn't particularly work. Mark, thank you very much indeed. Matt, I'll come to your call in just a few moments. I do want to just draw your attention to the latest bit of pre-budget kite flying, which might raise your interest because it's about your pension again. Not only, despite being told the opposite by Torsten Bell, at least being accused of talking in rot, the only thing I was talking about was the thing that the government had announced. The government is rolling into inheritance tax the remainder of your unused pension should you die and hand it over to your children. And that is now going to fall under the inheritance tax band after April 2027. Now, I think, in principle, that's a terrible, terrible thing. That's your saved money that you've put aside into a private pension pot. If you haven't spent it all, and if you get above a certain threshold, that will now count as part of your estate, which you may want to pass on to your children in the event of your death. That will now incur inheritance tax. I don't like it. I know only the very wealthy will end up paying it. The vast majority of people won't pay it. But in principle, private pension, private money, private children, state get out of the way. Rachel Reeves, according to The Telegraph, is now considering cutting the tax-free pension lump sum in a move that would be expected to raise more than £2 billion a year. Industry insiders said there was speculation that she will slash the maximum amount people can withdraw from their pension without paying tax. At present, pensioners are allowed to withdraw as much as 25% of their pension pot tax-free upon retirement, up to a cap of £268,000. Reducing this cap would allow the Treasury to raise billions of pounds a year. Torsten Bell, the pensions minister, has previously advocated cutting the tax-free lump sum limit from its current level, £268,000, to £40,000. So you pull £40,000 out of your pension tax-free, having paid into... A lot of people have paid into their pension, self-employed people, a lot of people have paid into their pension from taxed income anyway. And then everything after £40,000, bam, you get hit with tax on it. And I don't like that either, I'm afraid. I mean, I'm not going to like any of it. None of it's going to be popular. But I just think all that's going to do, if it's being flagged, is result in a lot of people drawing money out of their pension now before they get stung with this extra tax, no? Is this not a bit self-defeating? Let's come back to Lucy Connolly. Matt's in Worcester Park. Matt.
Hi, morning, Tom. I think you kind of were starting to stumble on the point there with your previous caller when he made the accusation that there was two-tier justice. I don't know how you can say there's two-tier justice when one person pleaded guilty and someone pleaded not guilty.
Exactly.
You know, if we had a whole load of the rioters last year pleading not guilty and juries finding them guilty in a trial... And then we go to the case of the Labour councillor found not guilty, you might then be able to say, oh, well, I'm not sure about the consistency here. But ultimately, what both of them said and did was pretty unsavoury, not something that I think people should be saying or doing. But ultimately, the Labour councillor exercised his right to a fair trial, and a jury of his peers found him not guilty. I think that it's a bit of a non-story beyond the outrage. I don't see how it leads to any evidence of two-tier justice.
Do you think... the jury came to the right conclusion in the case of that Labour councillor?
Well, then this potentially is where I go the complete other way, which is I think it's very difficult to prove the charge, ultimately. I think, you know, freedom of speech is obviously something that is very subjective in law. You know, if you look at the United States, they have a much higher sort of barrier to prove that what he was saying is to incite actual violence of people and what was said, as your previous caller said, sort of heat of the moment type stuff. And should that extend to a social media post that then gets deleted? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I kind of feel like people have the right to say things that are unsavory, but it's quite difficult to prove, which is why I think what you'll find now is that a lot more people will probably plead not guilty and go to trial rather than... there's probably another point around are people fully aware of their rights when they are...
This is the thing that Lucy Connolly tried to raise in her appeal, which the judge threw out, which was, I wasn't given the correct legal advice, which is why I pleaded guilty. I should have pleaded not guilty and taken it to trial, but I got the wrong advice. Well, kind of tricky. Matt, thank you. Harry's in Waltham Forest. Harry. Harry!
Morning, Tom.
Hello, mate.
You've done jury service.
I have.
Right. Question is, when did the law change that juries were allowed a conscience? Because, as you know, when you join the jury as a member, you're required to take an oath.
Mm-hmm.
And the oath says that you only find the trial on the basis of the evidence put before you.
Mm-hmm.
And the evidence of the video footage is guilty.
Well, they might have had some very good defence lawyers who showed another side, who put it in broader context.
Yeah, but... Sorry, it's the same discussion we had about the statue in Bristol.
Ah.
About when you pull a statue down, you do damage, and damage is criminal. He's guilty by his own video footage of inciting violence. For the jury to find him not guilty, that is contempt of court.
I don't know that you can call it contempt of court, because a jury can come to the conclusion that it comes to. People aren't allowed inside that room to help you come to your decision. You come to it as jurors. Now, there might be a view that, there might, for whatever reason, the jury came to its conclusion. So that's got to be the final decision. I would agree with you, that footage is terrible. I mean, that is, they need to have their throats cut.
But as a member, if you're in that jury room, as a member of the jury, that video footage, regardless of anything else, is damning.
Yeah.
You are guilty on your own footage.
So you would
words
have
out of your own mouth.
You would have come to a different conclusion, Harry, if you were sat on that jury.
I'd have to see all the evidence, but that one piece of evidence is damning.
It is, absolutely. So, as I say, maybe there is a very good defence lawyers who could put the evidence in different contexts, which leads the jury to a different conclusion. Whatever the rights and wrongs of their conclusion, that's the conclusion. That's the end of the story. Harry, thank you. Io's in Romford. Io.
Right. When I called up, I used the word dummies, and when I got on air, I thought, I'm not going to use the word dummies,
well,
but sorry,
twice
I am.
Now.
I'm going to have to explain to a lot of these dummies about the legal justice system in the UK, right? Because a lot of people are complaining about Colony are basically, British patriots. They believe in the British system. Well, this is the British system, people. Okay, so Ricky, he pleaded not guilty.
Yep.
That means it goes to a trial.
Yep.
And a jury of his peers. So that means members of the public,
yes,
decide if he's guilty or not. And they have decided.
People are just worried about the different conclusions.
Well, Colony, she didn't plead guilty. So she pleaded guilty. So that goes straight to a judge, and then
yes,
the judge makes a decision.
Yes.
Just like the statue in, the statue in Bristol, like the man just mentioned, when they pulled it down, that went to court. And yes, we could see that, okay, on camera, they've pulled it down, but there's a wider context to it. And as a society, the jury decided that it was not just to send them to prison, just like they said it's not just to send...
Well, they said it wasn't criminal damage, which I find very, very hard to believe given what happened. But I think maybe the dummies feel that they've had it explained to them. Thank you very much indeed for your call. Thank you for all your calls today. Back tomorrow. Global Player, please, if you missed anything. LBC app as well. It's free. It's official. You get it from everywhere. Coming up at 1, Sheila Fogarty. Next, Lewis Goodall.
Thanks so much, Tom. It was once unthinkable. It is now not only thinkable, but happening. The full-blown Israeli invasion of Gaza. Palestinians are fleeing parts of Gaza City this morning after the Israeli military began the first stages of a planned ground offensive, officials in the city say. Israel's troops have established a foothold in the outskirts of Gaza City, which is home to more than 1 million Palestinians. After days of intense bombing and artillery fire, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has said there needs to be an immediate ceasefire. The West has condemned, Starmer has threatened to recognise Palestine, and yet the killing continues. My question today to you is simple. When does this war end, and how?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, more than 32,000 asylum seekers were being housed in hotels at the end of Labour's first year in office. The latest figures reveal a rise of 8% on a year earlier, but a slight reduction in the overall total since March. The Conservatives are urging councils to challenge the use of hotels to house migrants after an injunction was granted in Epping. The Shadow Home Secretary, Chris Philp, says they are right to raise the issue.
there are concerns which Epping Council articulated in their legal action that putting hundreds of young men into the middle of a small community can have quite significant impacts. But you know, to get to the heart of this, to really stop this problem happening, you've got to stop the crossings. And that is why Labour have made such a big mistake by allowing these crossings to reach record ever levels this year.
Labour has dismissed Kemi Badenoch's letter to local authorities as desperate and hypocritical nonsense. A woman who was jailed for inciting racial hatred in the aftermath of the Southport attack is reportedly set to be released. Lucy Connolly's 31-month prison term has been criticised by some as too harsh, but it was defended by Sir Keir Starmer earlier this year. Connolly used a social media post to call on followers to set fire to hotels housing asylum seekers. Figures show GCSE results are relatively stable compared to last year, despite an overall fall in the pass rate. Students across England, Wales and Northern Ireland have been picking up their marks this morning.
Probably got my results, I felt a bit sick. Obviously, you know, it's quite a big thing, so I was really nervous. But now, obviously now I've got them, I'm so happy and I'm really glad that all my hard work's paid off.
It feels very relieving. It's like a weight off my shoulders now, I can like breathe now.
It was quite nerve-wracking, but I'm very happy.
Some 67.4% of all grades were at a 4 or a C and above. It is the second year grading has returned to pre-pandemic standards across all three nations. The Israeli military says its troops are now holding the outskirts of Gaza City. Officials say they've begun preliminary operations and the first stages of the ground assault on the area. The NSPCC says the law on smacking in England and Northern Ireland is out of step with public attitudes. The charity says its latest polling supports the removal of the reasonable punishment defence to justify hitting a child. Any type of corporal punishment is banned in Scotland and Wales. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 92.87. That's down one. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a mixture of cloud and sunny spells, some isolated light showers in the north and east, a high of 21 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
It's a chill summer's day. The twins are splashing in the paddling pool while Mrs. Thing puts her feet up. She's proper chuffed, having saved money on a British Gas boiler service. Now just £69, down from £109, with a free British Gas membership. Bliss. Well, it was nice while it lasted. British Gas, taking care of things. T's and C's apply. Applies to first year of annual boiler service only and renews at standard pricing. Membership required. Available to new boiler service contract customers. Ends 9th of September. Service by 30th of September.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Oh, good morning. It's 10:04. It's Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien. The great James O'Brien all this week here on LBC. Hope we found you well this morning. Grave news and grave developments, as seems so often to be the case. In Gaza this morning, unfortunately, Israel has announced it is expanding its military operations in Gaza City. This is the UK Foreign Secretary David Lammy condemning its approval of a huge new illegal settlement in the West Bank as a flagrant breach of international law. So developments in all parts of the Palestinian territories this morning. The Israeli Defence Force spokesperson Effie Defrin has said the IDF has begun the second phase of Operation Gideon's Chariots in Gaza, so-called, which it launched in May. He said the IDF would intensify efforts to harm Hamas in Gaza City, which he has said is a stronghold of regime and military terror as part of the operation. We, of course, talk in politics about the Overton window, don't we? This is the idea of what are the acceptable parameters of politics. What is thinkable? What is unthinkable? It is not so long ago that it would have seemed unthinkable that the IDF would be launching a full-scale invasion of Gaza with an aim to an objective to occupy the Gaza Strip. It would have once seemed unthinkable for Israeli government ministers to be talking about setting up a camp on the ruins of Rafah City in which to move a million Palestinians. That is something that has been openly posited and developed as Israeli government policy over the course of the last month or two. It would have once seemed unthinkable that we would be talking about UN agencies and international monitors talking about famine in the Gaza Strip, an entirely man-made famine. And yet here we are, day after day, the unthinkable becoming not only thinkable, but credible and realisable. Truth. This is something that I know gets a lot of emotion for understandable reasons on every single side. But what is undeniable is that those goalposts have shifted, and the Israeli government is openly talking in a way which would have once seemed completely incredible only a few years ago. We've seen one of the far-right ministers in the Israeli government openly talking about authorising these illegal settlements in the West Bank for the specific reason of making the idea of a two-state solution impossible. Because in his own words, there would be no Palestinian state to recognise. This, to their credit or discredit, depending on how you look at it, in fairness, is entirely open and transparent. It is not something that elements of the Israeli government are trying to hide. Meanwhile, of course, on the Gaza city situation itself, this is only threatens and can only make a dire humanitarian situation worse still. Remember that Israel had announced earlier on Wednesday, yesterday, that it was calling up an extra 60,000 reservists for the Gaza City offensive. It's justified launching a new phase by citing an attack by almost 18 Hamas fighters on an Israeli position the day before, which it had characterized as large scale, despite the fact that most impartial observers say it is a small size of reality. The humanitarian situation, as you know, remains woeful. Thousands of Palestinians facing widening conditions of starvation in Gaza had already begun to flee the city in recent days in anticipation of the assault. That is obviously going to get worse now. International condemnation coming thick and fast, as you might imagine. Jordan's foreign minister has said that Israel's assault on Gaza had caused massacres and starvation, and that its wider actions were killing all prospects for peace in the Middle East. The French president, Emmanuel Macron, has said the proposed offensive would lead to true disaster and drag the region into permanent war. Germany has said it has found it increasingly difficult to understand how these actions will lead to the freeing of the hostages or to a ceasefire. And of course, we have seen in the last few days mass protests in Israel itself, including from the hostage families, saying that the ongoing offensive in Gaza will do nothing to get the remaining hostages free, something that the Israeli government disagrees with vehemently and has said that those protests only add succor to Hamas. My question for you this morning is quite simple. This conflict has now been going on since October the 7th. I know many of you will have messaged and say it's been going on for 75 years, I know, but I'm talking about the more confined part of this story, which obviously this new stage began on October the 7th, the heinous, horrendous attacks on October the 7th, and everything that we have seen flow from it since. That was going on now for, what, 20 months ago, and going on for 2 years ago. And yet, instead of lessening, the conflict is widening. It is worsening. So my question to you this morning is, when does it end and how does it end? Because of the Israeli government right now is saying it ends with Hamas's total destruction. But how on earth can we even measure that? How can we ever say that that is going to be the case? Because how can you defeat what is, in essence, not just a terrorist organisation, but an idea? 0345-6060973. 0345-6060973. Text 84850. Obviously, a solemn start to the show in many ways this morning, but I think you'd agree, given the